Steve, thanks so much. Hi, and welcome to Tuesday. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Can I start out the show? I have some good news.
Yeah.
I am done with my Christmas shopping.
I finished it last night.
Just got the last gifts in last night, and I am done. So that I am thrilled about that. We should have a pretty good show today. All indications are today's show should be a good one. So if you ever want to jump in, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done.
They all kind of start out that way with the illusion that they could be good.
Kevin maps out what the show will be, and you look at it, and I look at it, and we say, who could mess this up? And then sometimes we mess it up.
We raise our hands.
Right. Right. Many times we do. If you would indulge me for a second, a quick goodbye to somebody I worked with for a short time. There was a guy here in town named Barry Keefe who did the news over at The Mix for, I think, 30 years.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he died on Sunday.
62.
Yeah.
Too young.
Way too young. And I don't know if you ever, did you ever get a chance to meet him?
I did not, but I listened to him for many years.
Well, he was just good.
And you know what? From a guy who tries to do what he did,
yeah,
I was always just a big fan of his.
It was impossible not to be, wasn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I never met him. I met his son once, he just was so good on the air.
He really, as nice a man off the air, as good as he was on the air.
And a lot of radio people aren't that nice off the air, so he was definitely creme de la creme.
It's a long list. We'll give the list later on of the people who are not nice off the air. We have that list.
You know what? Same time. Just give the list of those who are.
Every conversation I had with him, I worked for the same parent company that he worked at with The Mix, and I would get to see him on an almost daily basis because of the way the studios were situated. We were in the same building, so I would see him. And he was one of those people, and Steve, I'll throw you in this too, who could pretty much talk about anything. There wasn't a single topic that he wasn't well-versed on and had an opinion on had ideas.
That reminds me of the Prussian War. And
that's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean.
And Mary, you worked with him too?
I did, actually. I was his news fill-in for a couple of years. And, you know, it was a time when I was in the middle of having kids and no one would give me a chance. And I was trying to get back into the business. And Barry was so sweet to me. And he said, yeah, come on. And he just, I don't know, he was just opened his arms and he let me do what I wanted. And he just was a great guy. Great.
I always think, because sadly, here's a spoiler alert, when the show is over, the show is over. At some point, we're all going to die. And I always think you kind of win if when you do die, if people are doing what we're doing and saying nice things about you, then I think you probably did something right. And he's one of those guys, I'm sure somebody would have something negative to say about him.
I don't know
where you'd find that guy.
I don't know. He was so good at what he did.
Yeah, his voice was so soothing.
Ugh.
Perfect
Wasn't it?
News voice.
But it's not just because I love when people go, oh, you have a great voice for radio. It's kind of like what you say, too.
Right.
And he had not only a wonderful voice, but he was so good.
He had great pace.
Yeah.
His rhythm and his pace for every newscast.
Timing.
Yes.
Well, that had to do a lot with, and you guys do this, so you know, it has to do with the writing of the story. It's not just the delivery, but he would write the story to fit what he did so well, which was it wasn't just a news story. It was a story, and he could get that done, you know? Boy, he was such a nice guy, and I found out last night that he had died. And you know, you get that weird kind of a jolt, like, boy, I haven't seen him in a while. I really wish I had had at least one more chance to just tell him how much I enjoyed working with him. But, so Barry Keefe is gone. Longtime news guy over at The Mix. I don't even know. I know he was there for like 30 years. I don't even know if he did any other stations here in town. That might have been it.
Before The Mix was The Mix, wasn't it WCLR?
A long time ago, yeah.
So he was there then.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Longtime broadcaster.
Yeah.
And that's so sad.
Yep.
I know we're not getting out of here alive. I know that. But I can't think
about
that.
They have to find a cure for this death thing. Somebody needs to sit down and figure out how to stop this before we all go. I don't want that. I need that cure immediately. Whatever you scientists are working on, drop it. I know there's a lot of other projects. Stop working on those projects and work on the cure for death. We need to figure this thing out soon.
It's just, I really hate to see that in the news when someone has died and we didn't know he was sick. Did you know he was sick?
You know what? Somebody had told me about 4 or 5 months ago that he wasn't 100%, but I didn't know the extent of
I believe pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that part.
Good golly.
So Barry Keefe will certainly be missed by anyone, whoever knew him, whoever worked with him, whoever just heard his voice, because as we've all pointed out, he was really one of the best at what he ever did. So, you know, we miss you, Barry. We really do. A really good guy. All right, we have a full show, as I mentioned. A guest coming up right away to explain a word that we probably hadn't heard much about until recently, affluenza, and how this affects us. Apparently, you can be too rich to commit a crime.
I had to look it up because I am a very, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge hypochondriac. I saw this affluenza, and I'm like, what is this condition? I had to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it meant.
It's a rare condition. But
I thought it was a disease of some sort.
There's a certain guy who has it, and we'll explain more in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us during the show, 312-981-7200, you can call us or text us there. Jim Ryan joins us right now from ABC News. Jim, we were just saying how there's a word that kind of crept up, and I know that it's been around a little while, but it's really been in the news prominently in the last week or so.
A little while? I never heard it before.
Had you never heard it before? The word is affluenza, and give a little history of why that word should mean anything to anybody, if you wouldn't mind, please, Jim.
Yeah, I think it was really coined as a result of this case. The kid is Ethan Couch. He's 18 years old now. He was 16 2.5 years ago when he got into his pickup truck, was three times the legal limit for his blood alcohol level.
Again, at 16. 16.
Ugh. Yeah. When you're not supposed to have, you're supposed to have zero alcohol in your system because it's not legal for you to buy it.
That's right.
Well, he had it in his system, and he crashed, killed four people, injured nine others, and it was given probation for it. Now, the defense attorney made this affluenza, you know, coining that phrase, defense, saying that the kid was coddled his whole life, was spoiled, didn't know the difference between right and wrong, and therefore couldn't be held responsible for his own actions. The judge kind of agreed. She said at the time that it would be best for him to go off to rehab, to go to treatment, to come back and be a productive citizen. She felt that he could be rehabilitated despite the seriousness of the crime. Well, he didn't do rehab. He didn't get rehabilitated. He didn't go off by himself and be away from his bad influence family. And we saw a couple of weeks ago when he took off.
Jim, and, to your... Oh, go on, Wendy.
No, and just the affluenza comes from, like, if you're from an affluent area or you have too much money. I really thought it was some kind of virus. And I'm like,
no.
Why are they moving this kid back here? We don't want him here. What is this affluenza? I truly had not heard of it before now.
Well, I mean, it's a morph between the words affluent and influenza to sort of suggest that he had an illness, something planted in his brain by his parents who overprotected and coddled him and kept him away from all harm at any expense. And so I think that's sort of where the term came from, was sort of morph between affluent and influenza.
But spoiled or not, I've been a spoiled kid. I have a spoiled kid, and they know right from wrong.
Well, yeah, I think to all extent, though, his parents sheltered him from the law. He was given a car at 16 years old, a big, powerful pickup truck. He was 15, in fact, when he got the car. He previously had been pulled over by the police and was drunk at the time. 4 months before the fatal crash, was told to to stay away from alcohol, to do rehab and alcohol awareness, which he didn't do. And then he got into this big crash. His parents paying the way at every turn. His legal fees and whatever he wanted. So, I mean, they're spoiled, and then they're spoiled, Wendy.
All right. You know what it's like to be a broadcaster, and we have an EAS test, Emergency Alert System. So, Jim Ryan, can you hang?
This is only a test.
Only a test.
Hope you pass it. Hang on.
Yes, good luck.
Jim Ryan, Bill was cheating off my paper during that test.
I was looking at Wendy's paper through most of the test. We'll see if that affects the results. Jim, first of all, the defense attorney in this case, Ethan Couch's case, is gutsy enough to try something that most defense attorneys probably would look at as ridiculous, but they tried it and were successful. What was the judge thinking? I mean, realistically, when you hear a defense like this, you just say, please, privileged or not, we have dead people here as a result of this kid. How in the world did it play out this way?
Well, I think, and at the time when she passed judgment and gave him probation, 10 years probation, this was a juvenile court matter, by the way, She gave him 10 years probation on the thinking that he could be rehabilitated. He could go off and get treatment for alcohol abuse and come back and be a good citizen. Well, you know, as soon as she handed down the sentence, this probated sentence for 10 years, I mean, there were 30,000 petition signatures demanding that she step down. Well, within a few months, she had stepped down. She said it was a retirement, had nothing to do with that case, but, you know, it's an amazing coincidence. So, I mean, and she's made no statement since then, by the way, since this whole thing happened.
I know this is irresponsible for you to even answer this question, but has anyone ever hinted that there could have been a payoff for her at some point? That just seems like the kind of thing that a good judge wouldn't even consider, much less pass.
Well, I think maybe people have discussed that. I don't think there's ever been any evidence of that whatsoever. But, certainly there are all sorts of theories going around about why the decisions were made and when they were made.
Boy, you know, someone just texted, it's not that he didn't know right from wrong, it's he never dealt with consequences. Well, it's about
correct time,
you know,
at
every
16.
Once in a while, you got to face the consequences. And at 16, it's certainly time.
Right.
Well, and I think the indication that his folks were kind of the instigators of this whole thing came several weeks ago when Ethan Couch suddenly disappeared. I don't know if you've seen the Twitter video of him at this beer pong party. It doesn't show him drinking, but I think the suggestion was that he had been drinking against the conditions of his probation. He was supposed to have a meeting with his probation officer and undoubtedly would have been given a pee test and would not have passed that one. And so he decides to take off. Who's with him? His mother.
His mommy.
How about that?
And did she dye her hair, too? Because he does not look good as a blonde.
No, hers was kind of a red dye and was not too pretty either. She's in court, by the way, in about 5 minutes in Los Angeles at an extradition hearing to be brought back here to Texas.
And what are her charges going to be, if any?
It's called hindering apprehension of a fugitive.
Oh.
And it's a third-degree felony. She could be looking at 10 years in prison if, in fact, she's convicted. If he's brought back here, and I think everybody assumes that within the next few weeks, maybe next couple of months, he probably will be, he's looking first at 180 days in jail and then at 10 years more probation, except this time in the adult criminal justice system, meaning that if he screws up, then he could go to prison for 10 years on each of the convictions against him. That's 40 years.
Jim, do we know for sure whether he was allowed to even cross state lines, much less the lines of the country?
No, and because it was a juvenile court matter, the conditions of his probation were not made public. But I think that it's safe to assume that being at a drinking party or drinking yourself would violate the conditions of any probation that could have been imposed. So, no, we don't know that he was not supposed to, but I think it's a safe assumption that he wasn't.
Would this have played out differently should future President Trump's wall be built between here and Mexico so he could not escape? That would be different, right?
Well, it's a wall that's supposed to go the other way. It's supposed
right to
keep people from getting in. Getting out is remarkably easy.
All right,
so it's so weird to me. I mean, yeah, you don't get consequences from your parents. You're a spoiled rich kid. But at some point, when it's not your parents tempting you with jail time, don't you wake up at that point?
I would.
Yeah, you would
think. I mean, certainly that should be something to scare you. I can get away with mom and dad stuff, but
right. This
is like, this is the big house he might be going to.
It's big. What about this, Jim? Now, is there a precedent in court cases? I don't know if we've seen this defense since this has happened, but are other defense attorneys looking at this going, hey, this worked once, I could try this too?
Bill Cosby's going to try it.
Maybe.
I don't know. You know, I don't think anybody has gone into court claiming that their client was so spoiled that he didn't know that there were consequences for bad behavior. I kind of doubt it. But, I mean, seeing the reaction to this, the public reaction at least. And again, I'm not so sure that it was the affluent defense that convinced this judge to give the sentence that she did. I think she sort of said, look, I'm going to say that he can be rehabilitated despite the seriousness of it, and I'm going to send him off to rehab, and he didn't go.
And he probably could be rehabilitated, but it's just the death of the... How many people did he kill?
4 killed and 9 injured, one left in a wheelchair.
That's unacceptable.
Terrible.
You know, if no one was injured, yeah, maybe be a little lenient. Maybe do rehab him, but this is serious
very,
stuff.
Yeah, terrible. All right, so the next step, once again, is that we've got this extradition hearing for Tanya Couch, and that takes place in just moments, huh?
Yeah, in Los Angeles. He, of course, Ethan Couch himself, is sitting in an immigration detention facility in Mexico. He has an attorney there, and that attorney has filed papers. In fact, Ethan Couch was on his way to the airport to be kicked out of the country and sent back to the United States when this attorney filed papers with a judge. The judge gets the driver on the phone and says, nope, turn around, bring him back. I've got this this stay that's been filed, and I'm not going to hear it for several more weeks. So he's sitting down there in this immigration facility for a few weeks.
And they were only caught because they ordered a pizza or something in Mexico, right? Is that how they caught him?
Yeah, got him. Yeah. They had a burner phone with them, you know, the kind you use and dispose of. But I think the feds on this side of the border knew the number, and so as soon as it popped up that someone was making a call with it, they alerted folks in Puerto Vallarta, and that's when the arrest was made.
God, I hope the pizza was worth it.
Because
pizza in Mexico is not that great.
No.
A couple of texts I would like to share with you before we let you go, Jim Ryan from ABC. Someone said, if parents created this issue, why were parents not held responsible? Now, at this point, the mom may be. Somebody else said, there are many parents from different socioeconomic classes who fail to teach their children right from wrong. Why is it only when the parents are rich white people is there a get out of jail free card? It's a valid question.
Sure.
And my favorite text of the day, and Jim, you can take this with you. Those parents have should have watched the Andy Griffith Show episode where Bill Bixby is a coddled son of a rich man and ends up in Andy's jail.
Required viewing.
Make the kid watch every episode of that.
That's what has to happen. Jim, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Good luck for you all year.
See you, Bill.
All right, take care. That's
Jim
Ryan of ABC News. We'll take a quick break.
Good Steve luck has, for the whole year.
Yeah, I wish them a whole year's worth of luck. it's a fresh year. I want Jim to have a nice 2016.
That guy.
Yeah, he's good.
We're ruining his career, you know
well,
that.
Well, yeah, that's obvious. A break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. For a long, long time now, on Tuesdays, we sometimes refer to it as Tech Tuesday, and we find out what things are going on in the tech world, and Wendy gets all excited, and I get kind of confused because I don't know what any of those things do or why I would need them. That's how the segment always works.
I'm a bit of a gadget bitch.
Yeah.
I will say that lovingly. And we are going to get some help right now because we cannot be at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. But we have someone who is Josh Davis from Apt Electronics in Glenview. And are you drooling at all the cool stuff, Josh?
Well, we have lots of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's definitely a lot of fun because there's some pretty crazy stuff here.
All right, why don't you tell us some of the crazier, because every year it's just the new gadgets that come out, and it just seems, in my opinion, that they're always trying to outdo the year before.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way the industry goes. So, you know, the big event, CES, it's the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and it really doesn't really begin until Wednesday. So we're here early because of you guys. Our partnership's awesome, and we got to go to some of these press-only events. And that was CES Unveiled, kind of a sneak peek, and that happened yesterday. So we did get a good taste of what to expect from all the startups, the small companies, kind of the niche things, the fun, weird things. So definitely have a bunch of stuff to talk about.
I've heard about this smart refrigerator that pretty much can tell you what you're out of. Do you know anything about that Samsung refrigerator?
That was not at the show yesterday, but the concept of just having everything connected. You're going to see refrigerators. We saw something that had like a camera. There's an LG, I think, over there. There's a bunch of stuff where, you know, it'll alert you when something's low. And
isn't that ridiculous? You can't open the refrigerator and go, we're out of milk.
Tell you.
Yes.
The refrigerator will tell you. And how does it send you a text or an email? How does it let you know that you're out of something?
So all of these things that are connected, they're all going to be associated with some kind of app, and there's push messages that occur. So you got your smartphone. Your smartphone is going to kind of feed you information from all these different types of connected appliances and connected gadgets across the house.
Now, you've heard, Bill, of Nest is one of them. There are a lot of different apps and devices that do connect everything from
right.
your lights to your oven to your heating control.
Yeah.
And, in fact, yesterday we were talking about Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, who is going to develop and code his own robot mm-hmm. to take care of his house and his kid. Have you seen any good robots over there at the CES in Vegas?
you know, yesterday we saw a couple robots, but they weren't as cool as some of the robots out there. One was this little dog, and it was kind of like a little, you know, toy kind of robot. Nothing like that's going to, you know, live in the house and make things easier and kind of cool techno robot. More of the toy kind of stuff was
like
hanging
a Furby?
Out at the Unveiled event.
Is that what the, is that the direction they want? They're doing it for entertainment value at this point. The robot's not going to really do anything important yet, is it?
Well, no, there's some functional stuff where some of these robots are going to be like in an atmosphere where it's recording video and audio and communicating that to someone that can't be there. So there's stuff like that that might actually be pretty functional even today. So I don't think you're going to have robots walking around your house, you know, going to do the dishes for you yet.
We're chatting with the technologist Josh Davis from Apt Electronics in Glenview, and you had the little preview screening of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So what do we need to know? What did you see at the preview that you should tell us about?
Well, at that event, again, this is more startup companies, smaller companies, innovation kind of stuff. And there was some big themes that we saw kind of all over. Number one, I would say, is virtual reality. Everyone's walking around testing out these virtual reality goggles on their head, looking around up, down, left, right. There's guys that create cameras so that you can just record your own 3D, you know, world, and then someone else's product is going to let you tap into it. And some of it is, like, live, so you could be at an event. I'm snowboarding, and I've got this thing attached to my helmet like a GoPro, except it's not just a camera looking straight down the slopes. It's getting everything all around you, up, down, left, right. And the viewers can put on these goggles and be there and look around. They can go up, down, turn around. They see everything. So that 3D world, also on Facebook, they're really adopting with their own abilities. For, you know, people post these videos, and you're on the Internet. You don't have any fancy goggles. You don't have anything. But you can look around all over the place. It's a different way to record video. And that virtual reality theme was everywhere.
Josh, I don't know what company this is, and maybe there's more than one company that does this, but they've made boxes where you put your smartphone in the box. It's like a cardboard box, and then your smartphone becomes kind of a virtual reality conduit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and I don't know about a cardboard box, but I know like a big company out there like Samsung, you know, they have the Gear VR. So these really cool-looking goggles, not cardboard, they're real fancy, but to make them work, you take your Samsung phone and you kind of snap it in the front of this goggle system, and that is what drives the whole virtual world. Yeah. And the apps on the smartphone is what you're kind of immersed into.
Is virtual reality better than real reality?
And every time I demo it, it always has like a little choppiness to it. Like if you're looking left and right and you're looking around this world that's been created, it kind of has a little stutter to it, so it's not like crystal clear. Absolutely not. Real life is definitely better.
It is. Okay. I'll stick with that one then.
All right, and I'm sure when the thing, it opens Wednesday, you said, right? You're still doing the previews here?
Yeah, so today we are going to go out and get into some vendors. We're hoping to meet up with big names like Sony, where you're going to see like new TVs and big technology hit. So hopefully tomorrow when we talk, I'll have some more info about what's really going to go down at the show.
And I'm the only person left, Josh, that doesn't have a drone. And people make fun of me, but I don't have a drone. Is it going to be a law? Do we have to have drones by 2016?
No, but you're going to want one because some of these drones, and they're so advanced and they're kind of scary where it's like, oh, I don't know how to control this thing. It's very complicated. And they're all trying to make it sound like, oh, yeah, you take it out of the box and anybody can do it. But now some of these drones, like there was a drone from Parrot we saw yesterday. You guys remember like back in the day, like at the malls, they had these big styrofoam airplanes they'd like throw into the air and they'd swirl
around.
They'd
loop around and you catch them, sure.
Something like that has now been created in the world of drones. So you literally pick it up and just launch it into the air and it just has a mind of its own. It goes up into the air, it circles around. So literally anybody can start that one off with really no controlling at all. So I think drones are going to be a big theme everywhere across the show. And they are not going away.
All right.
Well, I want you to be on the lookout for something, Josh. They have had in the past at the CES smart shirts, smart socks, and the smart bra. And now they have a smart shoe. It's a French tech firm, Jortech, and they brought big red, bright red sneakers, and they laced themselves. So I want you to look into that for tomorrow.
I'll keep an eye open.
Was that in Back to the Future?
I think
some movie had that. I think it was Back to the Future.
Right. Yeah, you can, they had those shoes, self-lacing shoes.
Yeah,
you're right. They can self-lace. They you can adjust the temperature of your shoe with an app, measure your steps so you can figure out your fitness for the day. And the shoes will be available later in the year. You know how much they're going to be? $450.
Oh, bargain. I'd get a couple of pairs of those. That's fantastic. Josh, thanks so much. We will check in with you tomorrow and every day this week at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having us, guys.
Absolutely. He is Josh Davis
2016.
From Apt Electronics in Glenview. He is the technologist over at Apt. It's funny because someone texted us and said, where is it? Wait, Bill and Wendy, I wish someone would wish me good luck for a whole year. That would be great.
I just wanted to get it done. You know,
Get her done.
Yeah, well, that's what the prophets say. So, I just wanted to establish you got 12 months ahead of you. There'll be time to have some good luck. I threw it out at him.
Well, this is Tim. So, could you wish Tim?
Tim, from me to you and yours, a happy 2016 and good luck throughout the year. How's that?
It's perfect.
All right. A quick break and then more show ahead. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. Can I tell you what I was just thinking? We were just talking to Josh Davis from Apt Electronics. He's in Las Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show. And everything now has the word smart in front of it. You can drive a smart car or have a smartphone or wear a smart shirt or smart socks. Do you know what word it replaced? Like, what was the buzzword that was the prefix for everything 10 years ago?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Power. Power tie, power lunch. Everything had power in front of it. But now power has been kind of changed into smart for some reason. We want to keep hearing the word smart. It doesn't make us smarter. It just means everything around us is smarter.
Did the power make... All I remember was...
Power's out.
I remember power windows.
They had power windows and power seats in your car. But remember, people would wear a tie and they go, it's my power tie. And you go,
I never heard anyone say that ever.
We're going out to a power lunch. A power lunch? What is that all about?
I never heard that. Power nap. That's what I heard.
People would say power nap. Everything had power in front of it.
Yeah, you're right.
We're not superheroes. We're just regular people.
But
good
now
luck,
we're
by
smart.
The way, in 2016 to everybody.
Thank you. Can I share some texts?
Please.
From some texters at 312-981-7200.
Are they power texters or are they smart texters?
They're smart texters.
Are they smart texters?
Really smart, because somebody said, 773, I have an app on my phone for remote control for my TV. My younger brother doesn't know it. I'm having so much fun. That my younger brother doesn't know what's wrong with the TV. This is happening at our house, believe it or not. Dylan just turned 13, and he has an app on his phone, and we'll all be watching TV.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the TV goes off, and we all do the same thing. It's like, hey, Jim goes, who touched the gun? It's not a gun. It's a remote. It's Dylan upstairs turning.
He just turns it off by remote and ruins
funny.
Your night.
Well, he turns it back on just when we're starting to panic.
Oh, no.
So kudos to 773. It's much fun. Google does the cardboard that you mentioned.
It is Google. And for people who don't understand it, because I don't, I've seen pictures of it, but I don't get it. I guess you scotch tape your phone to like this cardboard box.
A VR headset you can make at home made of cardboard.
Right. And then you put it on your head
and you pretend. And you look stupid, not smart.
You look dumb with this, but then you can pretend you're in some alternate universe.
Do we really have to pretend that?
You don't have to, no.
I mean, what would you pretend?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I love video games and stuff, but I don't know that I need them to surround me. I'm okay with it just being on my TV screen. Does it have to be all around me?
It would be pretty fun to be in a Mario game.
I want to be in an AHA video.
You'd be good in it.
That would be fun. All right, that would be fun.
Take on me, baby. We were also.
But can I ask really quick? You know how now when you drive, there's constantly crashes everywhere you look because people are texting while they're driving.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when people are, they're driving somewhere and they're at a red light and they go, well, I got 30 seconds. They might as well be in a reality world.
They won't be driving.
That'll be the end of them, right?
Their cars will be driving for
them.
Oh,
maybe. All right.
That's a good point.
All right. That's the
something
future.
To be said for my old cars that don't do anything and don't have a big screen on it.
I know.
It's just old. I can't even plug in my iPhone through the speakers. I have to get one of those radio wave things that doesn't even work.
Right.
Thank God WGN is around.
Thank God.
We were also talking about those self-lacing red gym shoes with white laces that also you can control the temperature of your shoes with an app. Oh, my feet are toasty. Need to cool them down a bit.
They have that? That you're not making that up?
No, it's a French company.
You can control the temperature of your shoes.
It's Zhortech. Z-H-O-R. And they probably had to spell it that way because no one would say it that way.
Right.
It's a French tech firm. They brought to the CES big bright red sneakers, white self-lacing shoes, and even women's pumps.
Hmm.
They had those before where the women were playing basketball in them.
I remember those commercials fondly. And I mean that in every sense of the word.
If you thought that was sexy, boy, you were
easily
amused. It was
women
not
playing
hot.
Basketball in high heels.
They're not even good-looking high heels.
If the WNBA went to that,
wait a minute, get more than what she said.
What?
They're not even good-looking high heels.
No, they look like, but they're not. They're like the thick, you know.
We didn't see the shoes.
All right, I guess. I stand corrected.
The basketball hoop was only 9'6".
Right. But if the WNBA went to that model, they'd get more than 50 people a game. More people would show up to the games if they tried
that
for a while. I guess so.
The Lingerie Football League is out there. Can't you go see those games?
Yeah.
All right. So Bill can buy those shoes, but he will probably only buy them if they come in the same color as your Chuck Taylors that you bought in the 80s.
What color? Yeah. They're aquamarine colored. And I only got them because... The guys in Dexy's Midnight Runners had them. One of the guys in Dexy's Midnight Runners had them. I showed those. You know, we talked about those about 6 or 7 months ago, and one of my daughters was listening, and she goes, "You made that story up."
Where are those shoes?
I went to the closet. I have them in my closet.
They're still in your closet?
I only have 4 pairs of shoes, so they're easy to find. I really do. I have like 4 or 5 pairs. That's it. That's all I have.
Don't you have an attic?
Yeah, we have an attic. But it's,
do you think so? You should just wear them. They're very in style now.
I'll bring them in. I'll show them to you. I don't know what I was thinking when I bought them because that's a hard color. Nothing really goes with that color
with
aquamarine.
That's the point, though.
Yeah, I guess they stand out a little bit.
What goes with white?
Everything. White's neutral. You can wear everything with white. You're fine with white. But aquamarine, unless I'm at Gary Your Premium's pool party, when would I ever wear aquamarine?
You did buy them because you like the Miami Dolphins.
I bought them because this is how I don't understand this because I'm not that influenced by things now. But back then, I'm watching MTV and this guy comes on and he's in Dexy Midnight Runners. And I'm like, that's the key to coolness is you get shoes like that. Everything's good. And I bought them the next day.
Could I just ask you why you don't go like bigger than Dexy's Midnight Runners? They had like one hit.
I was young and impressionable. Now I would know to go with something a little more important. But back then, I was just a kid. I was 28, 29 years old.
But didn't like Roger Daltrey have some cool shoes or something?
I don't remember.
Or Pete Townsend, I'm sure they wore Chuck Taylors.
Yeah, they probably did. This is the song that inspired those shoes right here. It's not even a great song.
It is a great song.
It's all right. I don't know.
Oh, my God, I loved the 80s.
It's coming back.
You're smiling. Did you dance around in those shoes?
I've never put them on. I've never once had them on because even after I bought them, I'm like, I remember driving home from Lincoln Mall and they're in the bag next to me and I open up the bag and I just go, what? What did I just do?
Come on, Eileen. That's what you said.
I know. I was too embarrassed to return them, but I still have
you
them.
You could have said I bought them for my brother. He doesn't like them.
I could have. I should have done that. It was like the dumbest purchase I've ever made in my life and I bought a lot of dumb things.
And you still have them.
They're in my... I'm telling you, I have 5 pairs of shoes tops, and they're there. They're
just
in my closet.
Wear them. Can't you wear them to the next live remote we do just to make us all giggle?
They wouldn't let... Wherever we did it, they wouldn't let me in if I had those on.
What about Carl Yupremian's pool or whoever it was?
Garrow Yupremian's pool party? I think he died, actually, now that I mentioned
it's going to be a...
I'm pretty sure he passed away.
An unfun pool party.
No, it's going to be a terrible disaster. All right, a break, more show. Steve has the news in just a minute. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. You can reach us whenever you want at 312-981-7200. You could do that by phone or by text or by drone.
Are you going to wish everybody a happy day?
I hope everybody has
happy day.
A happy and a fruitful 2016.
I cannot find what I wanted to talk about.
All right. We will wait in silence. Mm-hmm. Everybody keep it down, please, while Wendy finds what we want to talk about.
It was an interesting thing that I emailed myself, and I wasn't ready for it because Judy Pilak was distracting us.
Judy Pilak, can I just say this just for this will take a second, and then we'll get back to the scheduled programming already in progress. Judy has, or she's already talked about this on the air, she has had a bout with skin cancer, and she's one of three of my friends in the last month who found out that they had it and had some sort of surgery to remove it, and I had gone a couple of years without anybody I know having it, and now all of a sudden everybody's getting it, and it always dates back to their childhood or earlier years. It's not like something they just got this summer. They go, oh, no, this has been going on with you for years. You got to get this taken care of. How scary is that?
It is scary. And I called to get I had a suspect mole.
Yeah.
And I called a dermatologist, which I have, and I asked to see her specifically. And they said, and this was, honestly, Bill, this was like before I took a break. So this must have been December 10th I called.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, I'm sorry, but the doctor you're requesting isn't available till February. And I said, okay.
Seriously.
Yeah. So I said, I'll take first available. And they said, okay, someone will call you back in 5 minutes and we'll schedule something. Well, the holidays happened, vacation happened, I forgot. And I realized just today as I'm seeing Judy, they never called me back in 5 minutes.
That's not good.
And I have
a
questionable mole.
They're that busy that it's like a 2 month wait, a month and a half wait.
Well, you know, being a little blonde haired, fair complected kid, I was always out in the sun as a kid.
Sure.
And my mom never put sunscreen on me. And we never wore sunscreen as kids.
I didn't have sunscreen on me until I was in my mid 20s. Yep. And even then it was, all right, I guess, you know, just spray a little bit. But then when the numbers stack up like this, you realize. I put it on when I go to sleep. I put sunscreen all over myself.
You don't need it then, Bill.
Just want to play it safe. I want to make sure nothing gets to me. But boy, is that scary. And I have insisted my daughter's whole lives that they cover themselves in it every time we go to the beach or we're anywhere outside that they have it on. But we did. When we were kids, nobody had sunscreen.
Absolutely.
It was just the opposite. You'd put stuff on to attract the sun.
Oh, I'd lay in the backyard with baby oil.
Yeah.
Just baby oil.
That's it.
And no bathing suit.
You were very popular back then. A lot of neighbors were just peering over the fence. Everything okay in there? Yeah, fine.
And also, you know, having a redhead, when Michael was born, that poor kid has had so much sunscreen on him.
Right.
And he had, I had him go to the dermatologist because he had a mole right in the center of his chest. And it was weird because you could see the border was brown.
Hmm.
But then in the inside, it wasn't like, it's like somebody outlined a mole in a coloring book and then didn't color it in. And I'm like, oh my God.
What kind of a coloring book is that? That would be a terrible coloring book.
I said, you know, Michael, I'm sure that's skin cancer. We got to get you.
Oh, did you?
No.
Yeah.
No, but I said, you know, it looks a little weird. Let's go to the dermatologist. And she said, since he's so fair complected and a redhead, that the, what is the color that gives you your tan?
Melanin?
Yes. I almost said melatonin, but then I...
Melanin, I think.
Melanin. He didn't, since he's so fair-skinned, he didn't, that mole just didn't produce enough melanin, and it was totally fine. It just looked weird.
Oh. Well, I know what to get him for Christmas next year.
A brown eyeshadow marker?
Yep.
I cannot find this thing. These are the top cities in Illinois, and you're going to be shocked at them.
The top cities in Illinois for what?
To hang at, to enjoy.
Oh, just the most popular or the ones that you're best served to go to?
Yeah, the best cities in Illinois. Let me see if I can find it. I don't remember the name of the website.
I think we all know Glen Ellen's going to win and then Elk Grove Village.
No, but you're going to be blown away by some of the ones that are on here.
Who decided this?
That's what I can't remember.
Oh. Wait, if you sent it to yourself, you must have it.
It's on the iPad somewhere. I don't know what to do.
But do you know when you sent it to yourself? Because it goes by date, doesn't
it? I know. I'm
was
panicking.
It yesterday or the
Burma.
Day before yesterday?
I'm panicking and I can't find it. So can we take a break?
This is, by the way, you know how we have talked about the fact that you've never deleted a single email, that anybody, whoever sends you anything, you don't delete it?
59,000.
You have 59,000 emails.
I deleted about 8,000.
You're about to get one from the Guinness Book of World Records because they're going to want to do a page on you very soon. But this is the reason that people delete emails is it's easier to find stuff. You know that, right? 59,000 of them.
I know, but it would be on top. I just don't know how to get back to my... God, I hate this iPad.
I told you that was going to happen. You didn't believe me. I said this. You'll love this for a week, and then it'll be nothing but frustrating for you the rest of your life.
No, I like it, but...
but you hate it.
I don't remember which account I sent it to myself, because I have several accounts thing.
Because why?
I don't know, Bill. Why do you ask these questions when I'm trying to find something? Curious. I just wish the dermatologist would call me back.
Maybe they did, and you just can't find the email. They might have contacted you by email, and you don't know.
All right, I'll find it.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we will find out what are the best cities to be in if you live in Illinois.
You're going
to
be shocked.
I'm not shocked. I know it's Glen Ellyn. You're not going to shock me.
No, it's not even on there.
Glen Ellyn. All right, a quick break, and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I tell you something I saw on Twitter?
What would that be?
I couldn't find it.
Oh, is it on Twitter? Yeah.
Yep. The top 10 most fun cities in Illinois. This is from, when I tell you where it's from, it might make more sense.
All right. Where is it from?
It's a website called the Retire Hub.
Oh. So is this for people who are having fun, but they're also considering retiring, or for who?
Well, let me read you. Sure, the Windy City has plenty to offer in terms of fun and entertainment.
Wendy, we don't call this the Windy City. We call it Chi-Town.
That's
you know
right.
that.
But Chi-Town is not the only fun Illinois city to visit. In fact, the state of Illinois has many great points of interest, museums, parks, and local attractions.
Places to clear your throat.
What? You turned your mic on to clear your throat?
Kevin wanted to let us know. This would be a good time for folks to clear their throats.
I'm trying to add to the fun of Chicago, you know?
Your mic has been off for the whole show. You just turned it on for that.
That was the cough button. He did it backwards.
I know.
But that was good, because I looked around.
Still works. Yep. Just wanted to check.
It's usually, you know, traffic or in the newsroom or Orient Store.
I should have blamed it on traffic,
that
actually.
Was Kevin.
No, because the voice was too low. That didn't sound like Jill Egan. I wish you good luck in the year.
Yep. Good luck for you, Kevin, in 2016.
All right. So we have points of interest, museum, parks, and local attractions for locals and visitors alike to take in and to enjoy. No matter what you enjoy or when you plan your trip, there are many great destinations to consider in Illinois.
Yep.
From the lakefront to taking in an NBA game, you can do it all in some of the best Illinois cities, no matter what points of interest. I kind of read this already.
But they have already said, excluding Chicago, but then all the examples they gave were kind of in Chicago.
I think Chicago's on this list, but if I may read you the first one, which you will find shocking.
Glen Ellyn.
No.
Then I am shocked.
Oh, it's not loading. Good God, y'all.
I told you, technology is better than ever.
Downers Grove.
I don't know if that's the best city in Chicago.
That is number 10.
I worked there for a bunch of years, and it was a nice place to work, but I'm not positive it's the best city to be in for fun
this
in Chicago.
Is the top 10. Downers right. Grove is number 10, according to the RetireHub.com. Live music venues, dozens of local fine dining establishments, nearby colleges, sports, and the lake.
The lake doesn't.
There is no lake.
The lake doesn't quite reach Downers Grove. It comes just short of Downers Grove. There's a retention pond in Downers Grove. Do they mean that?
Oh, this is the whole. Okay, I'm sorry. That's the wrong one. Whether you prefer catching a live show on Friday night, love local museums, wine tasting, or want to visit a local bar or nightclub, Downers Grove has something you can imagine for all age groups visiting.
You've been there.
It's fine.
It's fine.
I like it.
You wouldn't go out of your way.
I don't have the most fun in the world there.
If somebody said to you, you can go to Hawaii for a week or you can go to Downers Grove, you'd probably choose Hawaii, right?
I'd look at my checkbook first and then I'd go Downers Grove.
Right, base it on that.
All right, well, this is according to the RetireHub.com. I told you it would be
shocked. But I'm telling you, I think their number one priority is, because of their name, maybe a place you might want to retire to.
I don't know. You don't think so? I don't know, because the next town, top 10 fun cities in Illinois, Bloomington.
Again, it's
comedy clubs, local pubs, family-owned restaurants and bars, nearby parks, and live music venues are some of the fun attractions to take in. The city caters to crowds of all ages and has something for everyone to enjoy locally.
At Bloomington? Yeah.
That's ISU.
Right. they keep saying locally owned restaurants, but wouldn't that hold true for almost any city or town in Chicago, around the Chicagoland area, is that there's some locally owned restaurants? That's standard, right? Kevin needs to clear his throat.
Yeah, I know.
Can
what's
you hold
up?
Oh, you heard it. Okay. I can vouch. Bloomington's a great city. Very fun.
But it is fun.
Second best in Illinois, Kevin.
Not that this, we're going 10 up.
I mean.
Oh, so this is number 9?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'd put it around there, sure.
Yeah?
I mean, I don't think I've been to enough cities to fully, you know, I'm not an expert, I guess.
Have you been to Downers Grove? Because
I love Downers Grove.
So Downers Grove is number 10.
Yeah.
It's not number 1. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
I thought you started with number 1.
No, you don't do that in radio.
You're building to an extent.
Yeah,
okay, I get
crescendo.
It. All right.
Let me go to theretirehub.com. You know,
see
a
what
listener
they say.
Could just call and read it to us because my phone is
not
working.
It's better this way because it builds more excitement, more anticipation.
Edwardsville is the next one. I don't even know where that is.
SIU, Southern.
No, that's Carbondale.
Oh, SIU. Where's the other one? I'll find out.
I wish you luck.
I don't know that. Again, I hate to.
I know.
The last thing I want to do is start a fight with retirementhub.com, but I'm not positive that Edwardsville is the 7th most fun city in Illinois.
There is an SIU campus in Edwardsville.
Okay, well, it also features several local theaters, fine dining.
Is there any locally owned restaurants?
Local parks, sports venues, and outdoor activities to take in, whether traveling with kids or adults. This Illinois city has something for all to enjoy.
I got to admit, they sold me on it.
I don't know that I'd want to retire if this is supposed to be based. But I mean,
Wendy
either
says it's not the case.
But why is it on Retirement Hub?
It's just it's called theretirehub.com.
Does Hub Arkish run this website?
Yes.
He does?
Next, Champagne.
Agreed.
The Blind Pig Pub, Tumblin' Tavern, and several other small bars cater to the younger crowds. Nearby colleges also make it an exciting city for younger demographics looking for nighttime venues and fun nightlife entertainment in the city.
I don't know if that's true. When I was doing stand-up, I worked there a couple times. The best thing about Champagne is the name, by far.
And if you go to school there, of course you're going to have fun. But
yeah,
it's not like I go there for the weekend.
Right. You wouldn't say to a bunch of girlfriends, hey, let's just have like a weekend out. Let's go to Champagne. That wouldn't happen, would it?
Nope, and we are on to the top 10 cities, the most fun cities in Illinois.
Yeah.
Carbondale, number 6.
They're going a lot. They're heavy on the college towns, aren't
for
they?
For the avid outdoor enthusiast, this city has it all.
Yep.
That's true, actually. It is beautiful hiking.
You can rent bikes, enjoy trail hikes.
Oh.
Take in the lakefront breeze. They're putting the lakefront everywhere.
Everywhere you, yeah. It's
you know, the lakefront isn't all through Illinois.
It's Land of Lakes.
Right.
Or you can choose to engage in some local farmer markets.
Oh.
Or street fairs and enjoy some of the best local cuisine and products for sale locally.
All right.
You can do that anywhere.
Hot. Yeah.
This is the only one I have to agree with.
This is number 5 or
yes,
4 or 5?
Yes, this is number 5, the most fun, top 10 most fun cities in Illinois. If you like fine dining, this city is going to fit the bill. Many spots for nighttime and afternoon dining. Enjoy local craft brews at local pubs or take in a show at any of the local music venues which perform regularly every night. St. Charles.
St. Charles has some good stuff.
The Arcata Theater is
right
there. I've seen a lot at Arcata Theater, oshows.com. And there are every time I go see a show at the Arcata, I get mad at myself for not leaving early because there are so many antique stores.
Yeah, there are.
That are closed by the time I get there.
Almost all of downtown St. Charles are antique stores.
Now, there is a river for sure.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Right.
That's the one thing I agree with.
That's where Billy Baru's pub is, isn't it? On the river?
I don't know who that is.
That's a name that Carl Spackler says in Caddyshack. Remember, he goes, oh, the old Billy Baru. And then if you go to St. Charles, there's a restaurant named that.
Is there really?
I don't know which came first. I have no idea.
The chicken.
The chicken came first.
Do we have to take a break?
Kevin says yes. He wants to clear his throat.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then we'll come
I thought,
back.
I, you know, we were having so much fun. I didn't realize we already took our first break. Rock Island is number, excuse me, I skipped one.
Number 4?
Number 4 is Chicago.
See,
again, from theretirehub.com.
I think Chicago should probably be number 1.
Nope, number 4. Probably
number
4? The most well-known Illinois city and one of the most well-known U.S. cities for that matter. It's highly ranked for fun, the lake, the bulls, the bears.
There's also there's a hockey team, right?
The nightlife, Bears, Michigan
the Bears
Avenue.
Bears would be more under frustrating than fun for me.
Rock Island is number 3 of the top fun cities in Illinois.
So Rock Island, according to them, is more fun than Chicago.
You want to know what Rock Island offers?
The brewery.
Hookah lounges.
Yay. That's in Chicago.
Yay.
Sports bars, local pubs, music and entertainment clubs, and local acts regularly perform in this city. Add in great comedy clubs and local bars. This does not sound like Rock Island.
Rock Island has comedy clubs?
We don't
clubs.
Have any of that in Chicago either.
That's... No, we don't. We should add those things.
I think this is totally crazy. Woodstock is number 2.
The music festival? Or the town?
The town. Another appealing name in another great Illinois city to add to the list when looking for fun spots and events to enjoy. It has several festivals, live music venues, local performers, and entertainment taking place on a nightly basis. Not in the winter.
There's no way you could tell me that Woodstock is more fun than the city of Chicago. It's impossible.
Do you want to know the number 1 top 10 most fun city in Illinois?
Does it start with Glenn?
No.
Does it end with Ellen? What is it?
Evanston.
A small college town. I love it.
That's why it's the most
because,
fun town.
Because I live there?
Yep. It is a small college town and suburb. It's sure to provide entertainment for anyone, regardless of age. Comedy clubs, tell me yes or no.
There are, I know for sure there's at least one.
Local college sports teams.
Yeah,
Northwestern
bars, Wildcats.
Pubs.
Go-Cats.
Music.
Yes, all
fine
that.
Dining.
Yep.
And a laid-back atmosphere.
That's what we have at Evanston, is a laid-back atmosphere, Wendy.
Make it an inviting city to visit.
I invite people to visit us.
The lake adds to the backdrop.
Yeah, well, that's just a throw-in.
You can engage in fun outdoor sports,
yep.
Take in a college football game, or visit some of the finest dining establishment the state has to offer.
I do have to say, on any given night, when we're choosing a restaurant to eat out at, there are dozens of possibilities, all of them delicious. Really great restaurants.
No matter what you love, what you want to do, or what time of year it is, Evanston is a great Illinois city to visit.
True. Very true. The most fun city in the state of Illinois.
Can you even believe this?
Well... Yeah, I can.
Because you live there.
But there's so much to see and do there. It's never boring there. It's a great place.
You know, twice a year it's boring.
Mm-mm. No, I've not felt that.
I love my little LaGrange downtown area, but I will tell you this. We don't have a lake.
You got to get a lake.
How do we get a lake?
Well, you got to apply.
Who do I petition?
They don't just bring you. You got to talk to Rauner. He'll put one in.
I want a recall.
You got to wait in line for that. There's already that going on. But I like their choice for number 1. The other 9,
are
I think,
crazy.
Need to be juggled a little bit.
And theretirehub.com, I don't think people are going to retire to, like, Carbondale.
No, I don't see that.
And Bloomington and Champaign and Woodstock.
I don't see that at all.
For Cry-Eye.
No, exactly. A break, some news, more show. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kim. Kim, good luck to you in the year 2016.
Thank you. I was hoping you were going to wish me a good luck in the year. I was feeling a little left out.
If you just tuned in, we talked to Jim Ryan from ABC News at the very beginning of the show today. We actually talked to him during an EAS test, emergency alert system.
And the scores have been posted. We did really well. Everybody did fantastic. Congratulations, everybody.
We've done it so many times, we should be acing it.
At this point, yeah.
And at the very end of the interview, we were talking about that affluenza kid, and Bill just said goodbye to him, and I wish you very much luck in the new year, or something
right.
of that ilk.
Yes, I did.
And I made fun of you, and now you're wishing everybody a good luck in the year.
I want everybody to have a prosperous 2016, and I will, whenever I talk to any of you out there, I will wish you that good luck, because I want this to be a big year for everybody. I wanted to ask you this, and I totally forgot yesterday. We had some time off. You and I both had some time off, and I didn't get to ask you this. Apparently, this Star Wars movie is doing fairly well.
Breaking the records, man. It's just about ready to blow past Avatar.
Yeah. Well, it's on course, too. It'll take a little while longer, but it will be eventually the number one box office grossing champion. No movie will have ever made more money. However, if you adjust for inflation, I've been told... Gone with the Wind would still be the number one movie. Movies back
then. Quit living in the past.
You could see a movie back then for 5 cents, and you would get a popcorn and a Coke and a boat, and it was 5 cents. But now the price of the ticket.
And a hoop skirt, I hope,
they would
for
give
women.
You a hoop skirt, too. So if you adjust for inflation, Gone with the Wind, I don't know that it'll ever be beaten. I saw something about a year or two ago where they explained that when was that out, in the 1940s?
I don't know.
That
quit
in
living
1948
in the 40s.
Dollars, this movie wouldn't come close to what Gone with the Wind has already made.
How could that be?
Everybody was seeing that movie. Well, although, no, I guess you could say this about Star Wars. Hasn't your husband seen the new one 6 times or 7 times already? So apparently back then, people who would see Gone with the Wind would go back again 3 days later, and then again a week later, they would see it over and over again.
Hey, we got to go to that movie show, the picture show.
That's what people would say. Yeah.
Put on that hoop skirt and join me.
It's still funny to me, because I've seen Gone with the Wind a couple times, and I like it a lot. It's a great movie. It really is.
I bet you I've watched it 50 times.
Have you seen it that often?
Oh, yeah. The way I feel about Sound of Music, sorry, Wendy, is the way my sister feels about Gone with the Wind. So we would have to watch it, I don't know. When we were little, we probably watched it 2-3 times a year. Wow.
And there probably wasn't much to choose from in the way of VHS. Well, did you watch it live on television when it happened?
We watched it on TV, and then, DVD
however you could get it.
Videotape, whatever you had. Betamax.
I've read several accounts where they said, there's a line in there, I hope it's okay to say this on the radio, where Rhett Butler says, "Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn." And apparently back then it was scandalous for somebody to say that in a movie, that they didn't want to allow kids in because of the coarse language that was used in Gone with the Wind. And that's really the only time that anything is said that is even remotely, objectionable. But people were like, "Oh, man, I wanted to see the movie, but then Clark Gable lets off with this line. I don't want my kids to hear that. We can't have that going on."
That was such a good movie. We saw that in high school.
Did you really?
We were talking about...
Was that a class trip?
No, we saw it...
they showed it at your school?
Yeah, during history.
Oh, wow.
It was really good.
Excellent. I wish our school had shown us that. That's great.
The all-time highest grossing movies. You've got your Avatar is number one.
For now.
For 2009. Titanic, 1997.
Which I remember you saying at the time was the best movie you had ever seen. Does that still hold up for you?
You know, there's a weird reason for that. It was just an emotional roller coaster year. I had gotten married.
Mm-hmm.
My mom died.
Mm-hmm.
And for New Year's and Christmas, my sister, cousin, and I didn't really feel like celebrating because we had just lost our mom in November. So for New Year's, we decided to go out and have a steak dinner. Jim went with the girls, all of us, and then we went to see Titanic. So it was kind of an emotional weekend, but I really loved that movie.
I remember you coming back after seeing that movie, and you've admitted this, you don't see a lot of movies in theaters. It's a very rare thing for you.
I really loved that
movie. You came back and said, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen.
And at poor Jimmy Mack, he was there with, the three girls, me, my sister, and my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a long movie, and he might have had a couple of beers during our steak dinner, and he couldn't hold it. It's a long movie, so he had to go to the bathroom. And right when he came back, I'm like, "You just missed her topless."
Oh.
He's like, "Are you kidding? I've been sitting here for this long, and the minute I walk out..."
Is that why he wanted to see Titanic? Because there's a 4-second topless scene?
He thought Titanic was pronounced differently.
Oh no. Well, that's not right at all.
Jurassic World number 3, that came out in 2015, and this has The Avengers and Furious 7 and Star Wars Episode 7 as number 6, but I don't know when this is dated.
Furious 7 is one of the top grossing movies of all time? Is that right?
Worldwide.
Wow. I wouldn't have expected that.
Not domestically, but worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah. Well, people in foreign countries like to see people drive fast. that's like the big thing all around the world. Does the movie have people driving fast? Yes. Then we will see it.
We're in.
We want to see it twice.
But I was just, it's all over the interweb that Star Wars is going to...
It's going to win.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But now here's the question. This happened while we were all on break. George Lucas, I guess people know the history of George Lucas. He's the one who came up with the idea for Star Wars. It was all his brainchild. And then a couple of years ago, he sold the franchise. He sold Lucasfilm, including the Star Wars movies, to Disney. And then Disney said, "We appreciate the sale, and we're going to make more movies, but you're just going to be an advisor. We're not going to listen to your story ideas. We have guys that will now come up with the storylines for the movies." And this guy, J.J. Abrams, is the guy they chose. So now Lucas said last week he was talking about selling it to Disney, and they asked him what he thought about it, and then he referred to them, being the Disney people, as white slavers. That was the term he used. He said I sold it to white slavers.
I saw that in a headline, but I've not heard the video, the audio of that.
Well, it made a lot of people unhappy because he was already a fairly wealthy man. He made a lot of money off of Star Wars because he was savvy enough. He just didn't, when he made the deal, the original deal, he said, I get a cut of anything you guys produce with Star Wars
merchandise,
on it. Toys, robes, hats.
Genius.
Everything. I get a little bit of that. So because of that, he's made a lot of money. So now he made even more money when he sold it to Disney. So there was a lot of tension after he referred to them as white slavers. And then he apologized the next day. But you could tell it was one of those apologies. You know how, like, when you and I have to apologize for something on the show and we say it, but we don't really mean it? It was that same kind of apology.
Well, sometimes I mean it. It's like if we feel we have the right to, we could say whatever we want, then we don't really mean it.
But you could tell he was like, all right, if I have to apologize, I'm really sorry I called the Disney company white slavers, like that. You could tell he didn't really mean it. So I wonder what's going on behind the scenes now. Because the movie is going to make more than any of the movies he made, and people are just loving it to pieces. So I think he feels a little bit of, oh, I should be in on some of that love. Even though he got a pile of money, I think he wants some of the love.
He is on that. He totally is getting some of that love. That's his baby.
I know.
Someone else is just taking it for a walk for a while.
But there's several people, myself included, who as much as they loved the first three films that he made, hated the last three films that he made. So now for a lot of people, it's like, okay, now we got things the way they used to be. Thank you, George Lucas, for making those first three, but the last three we're not so happy about. So now he's like, uh-oh, well, somebody else came in. And it's like in baseball when a pitcher comes in and gets the save at the end of the game. It's like, well, how about the guy who pitched 8.5 innings? Why doesn't he get anything?
You know what I like about – I am not a Star Wars purist.
Yeah.
At all. And the three that you refer to with Jar Jar, and I don't know the names of them. That's how you can tell. I mean, I don't live for Star Wars, but I saw those movies. I enjoyed them. It was different, you know? But I respect the fact that George Lucas took the technology that was then available that he didn't have for the first original three. He wanted to play with it.
Right.
And he was also creating storylines to amuse his kids, which I kind of respect too.
There's something to that.
I know Jar Jar Binks was the most hated character ever.
He is.
Yet kids liked him, and it brought kids into the movie.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know, I don't hate anything that much.
Right. Why go through the effort of hating something that much? Right.
I mean, it certainly didn't match up to the first three.
Right.
But
don't you think if you're him, even though you got the giant pile of money, don't you think he feels a little left out, like, oh, wow, all these people are applauding for J.J. Abrams and all the Disney people, and I had something to do with this too, you know?
Yeah, but he knows that. He created it.
Yeah, but then
and
why...
And he's the one who sold it.
But then why call them white slavers?
Well, I don't know the whole story, so can I share this with you?
Sure.
He was on with Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
He discussed his feelings about having sold Star Wars franchise to Disney back in 2012 and chose to sum up them in a very particular way, and I'm quoting here. You have to put it behind you. I can even sound like him.
All right.
I have to put it behind you, and it's a very, very, very hard thing to do.
That's George Lucas Tynowitz you're doing, by the way.
Yeah, it is kind of. But you have to just cut it off and say, okay, end of a ball game. I got to move on. And everything in your body says, don't, you can't. And these are my kids. All those Star Wars films, I loved them. I created them. I'm very intimately involved in them. And I sold them to the white slavers that take these things.
Yikes. The Disney people.
They wanted to do a retro movie. I don't like that. Every movie, I worked very hard to make them different. I made them completely different. Different planets, different spaceships to make it new. And there has been some criticism, some coming from your mouth, that this movie was much like the very first movie.
It's a rehash of the first movie. It really is.
Now, George Lucas has clarified his remarks.
Because somebody called him.
Yes. He has profusely apologized for them while pretty much completely backtracking on any implied criticism of Disney that may have lain underneath their surface.
And white slavers? I said lifesavers. I didn't say white slavers. I said, who wants a lifesaver? Charlie Rose? You want a lifesaver? I have some.
White slavers. I just meant stormtroopers. this is from moviepilot.com, by the way, and this is his official statement. I want to clarify my interview on the Charlie Rose show. It was for the Kennedy Center Honors, which he was inducted,
right,
and conducted prior to the premiere of the film. I misspoke and used a very inappropriate analogy, and for that I apologize. I've been working with Disney for 40 years and chose them as the custodians of Star Wars because of my great respect for the company and Bob Iger's leadership. Disney is doing an incredible job of taking care of and expanding the franchise. I rarely go out with statements to clarify my feelings, but I feel it's important to make it clear that I'm thrilled that Disney has the franchise and is moving it in such exciting directions. But so why?
A quick time out. How do you go from calling anybody white slavers to saying, I really enjoy my working relationship with them, love Bob Iger, love the company? That's less than 24 hours later that he flip-flopped that dramatically.
But why did he even say that? What does he mean by that?
I think that means somebody called him up, somebody from the Disney company, and goes, hey, George, you know that giant check that we had a huge truck bring you, that giant, all that money? Part of that money means we're friends. You know, we didn't tie your hands up and say, you got to sign this saying you're selling the company to Disney. It was done a mutual agreement on all sides. You can't call us white slavers. It's called Disneyland, not white slavery land. It's called Disney World, not white slavery world. You can't call us white.
So he's calling. See, I don't understand why he called them that. Because he regrets making the deal?
Yeah.
Well, then why
didn't go? You know, after they made the deal, he submitted a bunch of ideas. He had these storylines for the next few movies. So he gives them these ideas, and they didn't take the ideas. They went, okay, well, thanks, George. We appreciate the ideas, but we already got some guys with some ideas. So I think he feels a little bit bitter, like, hey, I started this. You got to listen to me. I'm an advisor on this stuff. And they're not. They're going in their own direction.
I think he knew that. I don't know if he meant that it's just, you know, a lot of people visit that place every year, that they're, you know, they're slave driving, they're working hard. I don't understand why we use that term. Yeah.
I didn't hear it initially on Charlie Rose, but I've played the clips.
I've seen it all over too.
It's a really strange way of saying, I really enjoy the working relationship I have with the Disney company.
And he chose them. That's why I'm confused about it. It's right. Like he didn't just sell it to anyone.
But I think when he made the decision to sell it to them, I think it's because he believed they would look at him as an elder statesman and go, hey, George, here's some ideas we're looking at. What do you think? Do you like these ideas? They're not doing that.
And J.J. Abrams never asked him anything?
He submitted ideas. This is pretty well chronicled. He goes, how about if we do this and this and this? And they're all nodding their heads going, yeah, we'll think about that. We'll consider that.
Well, that's not very fair.
It's not. It's not very fair.
I'm kind of on his side. It's a poor choice of words.
Very strange choice of words. It is. All right.
Especially when he chose them.
I know. All right. A little bit of a break and then more show. And then Steve with the business lunch, that's coming up in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I wrote that in on every box and every month for my 2K's calendar. Good luck, Bill, and a prosperous 2016. Since we're talking about movies, I just want to say this really quickly. There were a bunch of 10 best lists from movie critics all over the place. And our own Dean Richards, who will be on with us on Thursday, he was announcing his 10 best list for 2015. He did that, I think, earlier today.
Yeah, I heard the tail end of that. Yeah. I missed the beginning.
We'll have him on to rehash it on Thursday.
That's why I didn't go to the podcast. I figured we'll just talk
to
him.
We can do it on our own. This was the first year that I remember. I love movies. I was a film major in school. I go to see a lot of movies. This was the first year that I can remember, and I saw a lot of movies this year. There were a bunch of movies that I liked, but there wasn't a single movie that I loved that I would have given 4 stars to all year long, and I don't think that's ever happened. I always have 2 or 3 or 4. It's like, boy, I would love to see this win the Academy Award, or I hope people have enough initiative to go out and see this movie. It's a smaller film. I would love for people to go out and see this. This year, there wasn't a single movie that I just raved about and went, now that's a movie.
Either they were sucky movies or you've become a curmudgeon.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
As you get older.
That could be what it is. Over the break, we saw the movie Concussion.
Yeah.
And if you're going to see just one head trauma movie all season, make Concussion that movie. I was very disappointed.
Why can't they use that as their tagline, you know, on the posters and stuff?
Right.
Bill Leff, radio host, WGN.
One head trauma movie. This is the head trauma movie to see. I was very disappointed in it.
You really were.
It had a great message, which is the dangers of football and how, you know, it could really catch up to you if you do this over the years. But there was a lot of padding in that movie, a lot of stuff that didn't really make sense to the story. Then we saw Sisters with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, two of my favorite comedians, my
you
favorite
didn't like
actresses.
That?
Extremely disappointed
Why?
In it.
Why? Was it too dirty just to be dirty, like dirty shocking?
Kind of, yes.
That is the new breed of women. Really, it started. I loved Amy Schumer's movie. You didn't like Trainwreck?
I did like that a lot. I wouldn't give it 4 stars or say everybody needs to see this movie, but I did enjoy. I think that was the funniest movie of the year.
Yeah, and The Sisters is not as good in that way.
I came away feeling that they're both smarter and better than the movie was. And it's written by a woman named Paula Pell, who's written for Saturday Night Live and for 30 Rock, and I love her work. But too often in that movie, the punchline was, I'm so drunk, this, or I'm too wasted on drugs, this. You know, that just keeps happening and happening. And those two women are way better than that.
See, that's what I have come to find out. Like, I loved Amy Schumer's movie, and then when I had seen her do various appearances afterwards, it's like a shock jock, just saying stuff to get a reaction out of people. And Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, I think they're both
hysterical, funny
gals, and I hate that word gal, but they have just become this behemoth together where they just lean on each other, and I just feel they could be better than they are.
You know what? I kept seeing interviews for the movie, and this has happened with other films before where you see the interview, and whoever's talking to them, they're just so naturally funny, and that... To me, those interviews, those 90 seconds or 2-minute interviews, were funnier than the 90-minute movie was.
Because they're genuinely funny people, but it's like, I just feel sometimes they're just saying, oh, let's go for the shock and awe.
Right. But that's how this movie is.
And if they just are themselves, you'll get part of the shock and awe. But
right.
I think sometimes, hey, as a woman who's, you know, I don't watch my mouth as much as I should, you know, you can use it sparingly and to make your point,
without
not just nonstop, like, you know,
sailors. Right.
And I feel bad saying that because I, you know, I'm a woman who loves to speak my mind, and I love the F word as much as any guy around, but I feel they could be funnier.
Yeah. Well, when you see this eventually, I don't know if you'll see it in theaters.
I don't know if I'm going to see it.
I don't know. I wanted so badly to like it. I love their work. And I even my wife said at the end, she goes, they're better than that. And I go, I think they are too. I really do. So
that makes me sad.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, back-to-back movies, we went to see two movies that I couldn't wait to see. And then I left feeling kind of like, oh, come on.
And you didn't like The Martian either?
No, I liked The Martian a lot. That would be in my top 10 for sure for the year.
But you had problems with it because you're
the reality end of it.
Curmudgeon. You get the new label. I wish you good luck with that this year.
In 2016. Steve Bertrand's coming by. He'll tell you what's coming up on the Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. I've just been told by Wendy that this is my last chance to wish all of you a happy, healthy, and prosperous 2016. And so I want to do that. Good luck, everybody, in the year.
You're saying it much more eloquently than you did earlier in the show today.
I agree with you.
Before it was just, you know, we were talking, who were we talking to?
We had on one of our many celebrity guests.
Somebody from ABC.
ABC
yep.
News.
Yeah. Yep. Was it Jim Ryan, I think?
No.
It was Jimmy Page.
Who?
Jimmy Page.
I don't have a show scheduled. Kevin, you got to print every day when we do our little lunch break. I don't know what I do with the show schedule. Who did we talk to?
I thought it was Jim Ryan, but I've been told.
Oh, Jim Ryan.
It
I'm
was
sorry.
Jim Ryan.
I thought it was Tim Ryan.
All right.
But you, at the very end of the interview, just kind of said, and good luck to you and all your
2016.
Endeavors for the new year.
Well, I meant it. It was heartfelt.
But now you're much more mellifluous when you're telling
people.
Well,
now I've had time to think it out. At the time, it was just kind of spur of the moment. I was.
It was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No one would have ever guessed that.
No, it was right off the top of my head. Kim brought up a story that I wanted to reiterate just a little bit in the news, and it has to do with stickers that are due. I think on January 1st or 2nd,
the
right,
Kim? Vehicular sticklers?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if you don't get a reminder, you don't think about it, but then you get
nabbed
and, you know, pay now or pay later.
All right, so these are the city stickers that we're talking about, right?
No, these are the stickers that go on your license plate.
Oh, okay, right.
But wait, they come up at different times.
Right, but apparently people, the state decided not to send out reminders because they can save like $450,000 a month if they don't send out a reminder telling you to renew. So it looks like in November and December, the number of people who renewed, it was down 19%.
But don't they also make more money then by issuing tickets for not having updated?
Well, right, you have to pay a $20 late
every
fee
year.
And you also get a ticket if it's not on your...
reminder every year. I get pulled over, and then I go, crap.
Right.
And then I go to the currency exchange, and they tell me I have to go to the clean air place to get my emission control before.
Yeah.
And then so I end up paying a ticket every year.
Right.
Because one car is, I think, April. One's March, one's April.
Well, that's the thing, too. You have so many, you know, some people have more than one car, so you forget which one's due when, and it's hard to keep up with that stuff.
The ones on your license plate are color-coded to whatever month that they're due, and it says... Is it just the year?
Yes.
It doesn't say, doesn't it say the name of the month?
It has the month, but it's like each year is like, I think, are we on green now?
I can't remember. I'm not sure. But nobody looks, I mean, even though that sticker's on your plate and you drive your car all the time, you don't look at it ever, do you? It's just kind of there. You don't
I know it expires
it.
In March or April.
Yours does, yeah.
But I mean,
I have no idea what month mine expires in. None at all. And the city of Evanston, you used to have to buy, for your windshield, you'd buy a city sticker.
You don't anymore?
No. Well, you still have to pay for it, but they don't physically give you a sticker anymore. This started last year. You're on a database where if the cops pull you over, then they can look it up to make sure you've paid for that. But there's no physical sticker anymore.
I like that because
me too. Getting those things off of your windshield is the biggest pain in the neck.
Razor blade. You just need a straight razor and it's off in a second.
Right.
I've gotten really good where it comes off in one fell swoop.
But you have you're in a gang. You always have a razor on you. Kim and I don't have that luxury.
I use a little Goo Gone too to get it off.
Oh yeah. I've seen that. Yep. Some Goo Gone.
Yeah, so everybody go out and check your license plate.
Check your license plate, pay up, because by us, if you don't renew it by the year's end, for the city sticker anyway, if you get nabbed, you pay twice the normal fee. I think it's $85 normally to get the city sticker, but then it's like $160 or $170.
But you get a reminder for that.
No.
We do.
They used to.
Because it's a dog license and two cars. So that comes every year, but it's not till, I think,
we usually get ours
May.
Around September.
Oh, really?
I think we have to display it by September 1st or something like that.
Shouldn't they? I mean, I know.
Start of the year.
I get that they're saving money, and I know it's at the start of the year every year. I get that. But isn't it kind of their responsibility to just send out a friendly reminder?
No.
And if it costs too much to do it by mail, send an email. That's
exactly.
Free.
Or wouldn't you be willing to pay for a stamp to get it in the mail so that you know that it's time to do this? I mean, I certainly would.
I would.
I get the reminder. I throw it on my dining room table. I forget about it.
It's in the Bermuda Triangle.
But it's kind of clean right now, isn't it?
No.
It's got Christmas presents on it now.
Okay.
For next Christmas.
No, I'll get it clean. God,
but you know,
it is
easy to do this because you can do it online or by phone. You can go stand in line at the DMV, but you can just go online and renew the sticker.
But it should be every year in January. Do it because then we'd all remember.
Right. It should
be
more
uniform. I hate that it's like one car March, one April. The vehicle stickers in September.
Well, they have to do that because everybody...
Too many cars would be doing it. It would be too hard to deal with.
And everybody gets their car in a different month. Like, they wouldn't let you just skip. Like, if you bought your car in February, they wouldn't just give you 10 free months. Then they're losing revenue.
Why not?
They're losing money. They don't want to lose money. It's all money, you know.
Well, I buy it then. I buy it in February, and then at the beginning of the year. If I buy the car in October, then I pay for 3 months.
Oh, I'm okay with that. Cause
me
I'm
too.
I love that idea, but they would lose too much money.
We have a great idea from Mike. Maybe it'll help me and you, Bill. Mike, what do you think? How do we remember this?
Best way to do it is you use like the Google calendar on either your smartphone or your computer and put in the reminder as to when your sticker is due, and you can set up several reminders as to a month beforehand, or even 2 weeks beforehand, to constantly remind
you. That's smart.
You.
Just keep. It's almost like a snooze alarm where you just keep hitting it, going, "Okay, I got a month. I need more time. Now I got 2 weeks. Now I got a week." That's brilliant.
Well, yeah, and plus, then if you let's say you have three cards, you can say, "Okay, the wife's card goes this time. The family card goes now."
Yeah, it's a very smart move.
That way.
Yeah, I mean, I do that with all the doctor's appointments.
So
and,
why not with this?
Yeah, what a great idea.
You
all right, Mike, you're a genius.
Mike.
No problem.
Thank
right.
you.
Happy. Oh, I was going to say have a nice 2016, but now it's too late.
Well, we got to hear Dave's idea.
All right.
Dave, you're nuts. I can tell you that right now.
Now, what happened 30-some years ago when these stickers first came out, this guy decided to pretend it was like a postage stamp. He peeled the back and thought he had to lick it to get it to stick on the license plate. Except it glued right to his tongue, so his wife called for an ambulance. He's choking, and he had to go in the ambulance all the way to the emergency room with his tongue sticking out, trying to breathe.
Did they charge him for an extra sticker?
Yeah.
Of course they did. It's Illinois. Come on. You know the answer to that.
It's a sad tale of woe, Dave, and Bill has something to tell you.
Have a happy and safe 2016.
You too, bye.
All right, thank you. That was half-hearted at best, wasn't it?
Claire, we can get an email reminder, can't we?
Yes, you sure can.
How do you
All
do
you
that?
Have to do is you just have to go to cyberdriveillinois.com, and if you pull out your Illinois registration identification card, which is should be in your glove box.
Yeah.
And that's where you get your little sticker attached to it. There should be a registration ID and mm-hmm. a PIN number. And when you go to Cyber Drive Illinois, you enter those items and boom, they will send you an email.
I didn't know that.
Year. It's a big secret.
That's excellent. They don't charge
right
extra for that. No charge.
No charge. No
Cyber
charge.
Drive Illinois.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
CyberDriveIllinois.com.
And you've done this, Claire, and it's worked. It's been effective for you.
Well, I did register. We'll see what happens in October
okay.
of 2016,
All right.
whether they keep their promise or not.
Well, good luck. And have a happy and safe 2016. Don't tease me. I mean
thank
this.
You,
this is heartfelt. I mean this.
Good luck to you, Bill.
Thank you.
In the coming
thank
year.
Thank you. I have another car-related thing I would like to share with you. Can we come back and I'll tell you another a little quirk in the Illinois driving system?
Absolutely.
All right.
Good luck with that.
That's in 2016? All right, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, how does this sound? Weather in the first 5 minutes. Watch Chicago's first weather report at 10 p.m. with Tom Skilling. Weeknights at WGN TV News at 10. And we want to wish Tom a very happy and prosperous 2016, Wendy.
Whatever happened to the Spin Doctors and the lead singer with that little Billy Goat's gruff beard?
I don't know where the Spin Doctors went. They're gone. They were very popular
they
for a while.
Out.
I guess they did. I want to bring up another glitch in the Illinois toll system or driving system anyway. And I want to warn everybody, I'm going to use the word transponder when I tell this story. So just be prepared because the word
wait.
Transponder is going to come up. Several years ago when they revamped the tollway system where they did the open road tolling where
you
don't have
to
it's not easy for me to say. You don't have to stop and pull over.
And it's cheaper.
It's cheaper if you have the transponder. I told
the
you.
The magic word is.
Today's password is transponder. Ding. So if you give them the transponder, you get the miracle low price. But if you don't have one.
85 cents or is it more than that? $1.50?
I don't know. I think it varies. It's different in different places, isn't it?
It is up there, though. It's like twice the amount.
But they charge you a lot more if you don't have a transponder. So I said to my wife, I go, I don't trust this system. And she goes, what are you talking about? You don't trust it. I said, there's something about it. I think they're just going to charge our card at random. And she goes, well, they're not going to do that. And I go, I don't trust them. So 2 months ago, you know, what happens is when you're out of funds on your transponder, it automatically charges
it
you.
It replenishes.
It costs $40.
You
and
hook
then they,
up a credit card
right.
to it, and they take a minimum of $40,
right.
put it on there.
Right.
When that runs out, it
they
does
do it again. So in October, on our Visa bill, we get charged $40 from the Illinois toll system for the transponder. I just broke the world record for the same transponder. And then in the month of November, another charge for $40 to our Visa card.
Do you have two transponders?
We have one. And we use it extremely infrequently. My wife uses
it. What about your daughters?
Hardly ever.
You have one for all those cars?
Yeah. My daughters never use it.
I think that's a rule violation.
It is a rule violation.
You have to have one per car, don't you?
You can't share cars.
No. But I'm saying, no, you can because we've called and checked on that. We can, as long as you register more than one car.
Oh,
and we
right.
have,
and you can do that online.
You can do that online, and we did do that because there's time. It's almost always my wife that uses it. Every once in a while,
you'll
my
take it off the Velcro
me.
And and forget to put it back. And
that happens sometimes, right? But we checked, and they said, yeah, that's perfectly allowable. So then 2 months in a row, we got a $40 charge from the Illinois toll system, and there's no way in the world we used it that many times in a month. It's
so you called them.
That's coming either today or tomorrow.
What are you waiting for?
Just biding my time. Just making
for what? For them to make another charge?
Wouldn't that be something? If then in my December bill, I got another $40 charge. Wouldn't that be something?
Why didn't you call that day when you discovered it?
Because it takes my family a couple days to process things like this, to ponder it and say, what are our best options? Should we hire an attorney? Should we get a militia and just take over a federal building? How do we best handle this situation?
How do you guys survive in this world?
I don't know.
When the zombies come, the lefts are screwed.
We're the first ones gone. We'll be the first ones gone.
But your transponder will still be there.
Right, charging us $40 a month. But they can't do that. They just can't randomly go, we haven't charged you guys in 30 days. Here's another $40. You can't get away with that. But I don't know how to prove. There must be some way to prove that we didn't use it, right?
Well, a first step would be to call them and say, I was charged $40. We haven't used this $40 worth.
In a month.
And we've been charged again. Can you tell me why that has happened?
And they'll say they can refund you the money as soon as Illinois has a budget.
Yeah, now you're not even getting your income tax refunds till after March.
I know.
Which I don't usually get anything back, so that's all right.
So I know in the past, if we've ever had any kind of discrepancy with them, they've been very, very good about it. But how many people,
I don't check my statement.
I check my stuff every month, but I got to think there's a lot of people out there that don't check their monthly statement for things like that.
I'm getting ripped off for everything.
I think you are.
We got to start checking. I do check my debit card.
Yeah.
But I don't use my credit card for anything really anymore. And I do have some things linked up to it.
Right.
So if I'm not making any charges that month, I have automatic payments, I'm doing it. I'm not going to check my statement.
But here's what you need to do. And I only started doing this a couple years ago when places like Target were getting blitzed from people hacking. As soon as that started happening, I started going over not only my monthly statement for Visa, but almost every time I go to the bank, I ask for like a 15-day printout of all activity.
God, they hate you when they see you.
They know that
up.
There's a lot
you
of...
You can get this online, you know?
Probably.
Oh,
I know you could. But I like to do things in person. I'd rather do...
Could you print me up 15 days?
Oh, yeah. They always give me that smile that's...
Here
you know,
he comes.
Somebody from corporate comes
Bertha?
In.
Here
we got
to
smile when
one.
This guy's coming. Yeah, sure, sir. We'd be happy to. Have a happy and safe 2016.
Is that where you got your material?
Yeah. Yes.
Notice they didn't say prosperous.
No, they did not say prosperous.
Hannah, can you help Bill, please?
Sure.
What can he do?
If you go to your account on the Illinois Tollway website,
yeah,
and you put in your information, there's an account history that lists all of the charges, all the tolls that you've gone through.
For the whole month?
For the whole month.
Yeah.
I think you can actually put the dates in that you want to check.
All right. So that'll tell us right there.
You actually used it, and then if somebody somehow used it and it wasn't you, then you have an argument.
Terry is cheating on you by using the tollway without your knowledge.
I don't think she would do that.
No, that was a Murder, She Wrote episode. I remember that.
Was it a Murder, She Wrote? All right, but here's what... And I don't know if you'll know the answer to this, Hannah, or not, but my thought was, could somebody somehow clone our transponder and use our account number? Is that possible?
I have no clue.
All right.
Why would it... Why? Why would they do that?
Because then they'd be traveling the tollway system of Illinois for free, and I'd be getting charged for it. Is that? I mean, somebody could do that. They do that with telephones. Why couldn't they do that with transponders?
I don't know. But now I'm on IllinoisTollway.com.
Can you put in your account number?
No, because I forgot my stupid username and password.
What's yours, Hannah? Give it out.
Oh, no.
You don't want to do that? All right.
No, I don't want to do that.
All right. Well, have a happy and safe 2016 then, Hannah.
Well, thank you. And you too. I hope you get it resolved.
I do too. Thanks
Hannah. I read her name backwards and it still says Hannah.
It still says Hannah.
Yeah, you can go to IllinoisTollway.com
And it gives you a whole history page of
You can pay your tolls online. You do have a 7-day grace period.
Right.
In case you left the transponder in another car. And
it feels good to say, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, you know, there are exits now, too, where it says if you don't have a transponder that you're supposed to log on and pay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's no cash. There's no
Easy Pass phishing alert.
What does that mean?
Helping you. Fraudulent electronic communication. The Illinois Tollway is advising iPass customers to disregard erroneous emails being sent from Easy Pass Collection Agency.
I didn't get an email. I just got another bill for $40.
All right, let me look for that.
There's got to be somebody who's figured out a way to clone those, because they do them with credit cards.
They do now.
I gave them the idea. Wow.
They're an entrepreneur.
I did not mean to do that. All right, a quick break, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're 312-981-7200. Last week, Wendy, I was perusing a medical website, and they were explaining the strangest medical stories of the year. Some of them advances, technical breakthroughs in the world of medicine. Others were just strange stories of things that had never been documented from a neuroscience angle. And I found a story that I had not heard of. I guess it started in the summer or was reported in the summer, but I had not heard about it until just a few days ago. Dr. Jerry Burgess joins us right now. Dr. Burgess is a lecturer in clinical neuropsychology at the University of Leicester in England, although you're an American, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Dr. Burgess, this is a very, very strange case, and I'm going to have you explain to our listeners what exactly is going on with William, a patient of yours. What can you tell us about William?
Well, William has a very unusual case of antegrade amnesia, which basically means that from a certain point in his life, he has been unable to make any new memories of day-to-day life or tracking the age of his children or wife's new job or new car that they may have. He simply doesn't remember anything. And this incident began when he visited a dentist for a routine root canal and received local anesthetic and was lying back under yellow shaded glasses. And at some point, his consciousness changed, but they didn't know that anything was peculiar until they finished the root canal and asked him to get up, and he wasn't able to get up. From that point, it eventually became clear that his speech was slurry, and they gave him oxygen and dextrose tablets, thinking that he was just having like a fainting spell. But it turns out that they realized that he wasn't laying down any new memories soon after that, and he was taken to the hospital.
Now, could he have experienced a stroke or something like that during the procedure?
Well, it would not appear that he had a stroke or anything of the nature. What makes his case unusual, because antegrade amnesia, of course, is not an unusual thing, but what is unusual about him is that in several different types of brain scans that are available to us, all of them come out clear. There's no structural damage. There's no brainwave abnormality. No cerebral blood flow that is unusual. So this is a difficult one to explain.
Everything looks normal on these brain scans and everything, correct?
Yes.
That's wild.
That's right.
And I guess the aftermath of this, if I'm getting this right from the story, is that he's stuck in some sort of a perpetual loop where he thinks that every day that he wakes up, every day is March 14th, 2005, the day that he was at the dentist's office, and he believes when he wakes up every day that he has to go back in and have root canal work done, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
God, that's like hell, that, you know, waking up thinking you have to go to get a root canal.
Yes, I mean, it does. It seems like God's joke or something.
Yeah.
You have to wake up every day thinking it's the day of a root canal.
Dr. Burgess, is this totally unprecedented? Has there ever been anything quite like this before that you're aware of?
Well, What's unusual, and I think it's important to say, going to the dentist is already a scary thing, and mm-hmm. I can say that this is the only case that I know of its kind. But there are similar cases of amnesia like this that actually were preceded by a neck injury or a back injury. And one theory that came to me from someone else, and it may just be true, is that actually there are people who perhaps have a latent genetic trait, and something in their spine gets injured, like a pinch or something, and it activates this gene that then doesn't adequately synthesize proteins, which is what permanent memories is all about, essentially mm-hmm. a rearranging of the brain through proteins.
What about the dentist? When he was moved back into his chair, could that have pinched a nerve or started this? Has there been any kind of blame going on for the procedure that happened at the dentist?
Yeah, there is no blame for the procedure, partly because there was no precedent for it. So there was really nothing to pin it on. And he had suffered a back injury a couple of decades before, and with aggravation of his back. It's been just a case that's been very hard to explain or understand. And his amnesia is also unusual from the other kinds of amnesias that we know about, because most amnesias have to do with slow deterioration of the brain through dementias or rapid injury or poisoning to specific parts of the brain that have to do with making new memories. And when a part of the brain called the hippocampus is damaged in the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, what people experience is a perpetual moment. All they have awareness for is just a few seconds, maybe up to a minute. Maybe they could follow a conversation for a little bit. But what's unusual about William is that he has a 90-minute span of awareness.
That's it, 90 minutes.
Poor guy.
Yeah, before he forgets everything. And another thing that's unusual about him is that with people with hippocampal damage, they also can learn new motor skills mm-hmm. or tasks or how-tos, like how to ride a bicycle or how to put together a stand or something like that. And he's able to learn that normally, but he also forgets that.
Wow, this is a terrible situation to be in. Now, how long have you known William?
I've known him now for 10 years.
And what is a tip? How old is William at this point?
He's 48.
48 years old. And does he have a family? Is he married?
Yes, he married his equivalent to high school sweetheart, and they're still married. And when this incident occurred, they had two children that were 10 and 8, who of course now are 20 and 18. And he wakes up each morning expecting also to find his children at the age that they were. And as a way to manage his situation, he was an officer stationed abroad over in Germany in the British Army. They came home when they realized this thing wasn't getting any better and moved into his mother's house because he, of course, from his past history, his childhood, he knows the neighborhood, he knows where the shops are.
He's more comfortable there.
Yes, he's more comfortable, and he also knows how to get his way around. So that's really important, but he has that problem to wake up to every morning, as you said, that he wakes up and he wonders why he's not in Germany, why he's in his mother's house.
Poor
and essentially
guy.
His wife says, go downstairs, read your computer, it's all there. So each morning he reads about his whole life once again, and it's a repeat over and over again each day.
Dr. Burgess, if you're just joining us, Dr. Jerry Burgess is our guest, a clinical neuropsychologist, and we're talking about the strange case of William in England, who every day wakes up believing that it's March 14th, 2005. I'm sure I'm not the first person to make this parallel, but there's a film called Memento, about 15 years mm-hmm. old, where it's a very similar circumstance. It's a little different, but kind of a similar circumstance. You're aware of this, right?
I am aware of that, yes.
Yeah. Go on.
It's been a while since I've seen the film, but I think it's a fairly good rendition in that William also has his problem-solving ability. He has his intelligence. He has all this available to him, and he can work through strategies through the day, learn when he wakes up in the morning that he has a problem and that he has to face this and manage it throughout his day. And, of course, William doesn't meet adventures like the Memento character
right.
each day.
Right, good.
But he does manage his life, and he has the same sort of capabilities, but he knows that you know, these memories of that day are going to be lost.
Yeah.
But so from what I'm hearing then is he can learn things. He comes down every morning, looks at the computer screen to his life story to remind him, but then 90 minutes later, does that information pass, and again he's confused?
I'm not sure any of us can really understand exactly what it's like for him, but I should say as well that he forgets things after 90 minutes that have not been practiced, rehearsed, or brought back into conscious awareness again.
Okay. So new experiences.
Yeah. So actually, if something is said to him or taught to him and becomes latent and stays latent for 90 minutes, then it's lost. But he has like a refreshing mechanism through the day so that he could have some continuity. And every 90 minutes, he does have his beeper go off and, you know, go back and to remind him to go back and read again his list of what's happened and who's died since 2005 and all these things, so he doesn't make an error of saying something improper,
sure.
whatever the case may be.
Wow.
So there is a little bit of, you know, you might say there's a continuity to his day, but if something is not being utilized or actively participating in, it will be lost after 90 minutes.
Dr. Burgess, can I ask this? When you were first telling us the breakdown of what happened to William on that day at the dentist's office, you mentioned that he was laying back and wearing yellow-shaded glasses. Is there Yes. something to that, that part of the description, or is that just you just being, you know, as fully formed as you needed to be to tell the story, or do you think there could be something to that part of it?
Well, I do wonder about a neck injury that's just difficult to find. But the reason why I said the yellow shaded glasses was that the dentists weren't able to see his eyes opened or closed and what might have been happening to his pupils or if anything was happening. Essentially, he just laid back with his mouth open and seemed a cooperating patient.
Yeah.
But it seems that something, William's last memory was, he remembers getting the shot of the anesthetic in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he remembers the drilling starting, and that's his last memory.
You know, when I go to the dentist, and I actually love my dentist, but I still kind of have a little nervous action going when I'm sitting in the chair, and I run through the Novocaine so quickly that they have to keep shooting me up mm-hmm. in order to do it, and I really have like a freak out session every time I go to the dentist. That being said, Dr. Burgess, if William had some kind of aversion to going to the dentist, I know that this seems like something a traumatic injury could do to the brain. Could this be like a traumatic enough event that it stopped his brain from functioning?
Well, it's a good question, and it's a theory that is still out on the table. But there wouldn't be. I mean, I think in knowing him 10 years as well, I could say, you know, he was a military officer, and he's not the kind of person to wear his emotions on his sleeve.
Right.
He's a very cool, under pressure sort of person. He's been in combat and all this in the Gulf.
But so couldn't this be some kind of post-traumatic stress that is kicking in at a time you didn't expect it? It just, you know, next time anybody complains about their life, think of this poor William guy and what he has to go through every day. But could it be some remnant or some lasting thing from post-traumatic stress disorder?
You know, you couldn't rule that out for sure. It's a really good thing to think about. And post-traumatic stress disorder is unusual because usually that's often about a memory that won't go away, and or a need to forget one's identity and one's past. What's unusual about his case is that he's unable to lay down new memories, and that doesn't really have a psychological function that's been identified to date.
Unless it's his brain trying to protect him from
mask
the things that he's seen before. My dad died when I was 10, and a lot of people have said, you know, when you're a young child and you lose a parent, like, I don't have any memories of my dad. And I was 10, I should. But a lot of times your brain kind of protects you by letting those memories fade.
Yes, yes. And I guess it would seem that in your childhood, the memories faded from some time in the past. And it is just unusual that a memory would only stick around, a very benign material, actually, for only 90 minutes.
Yeah, the whole thing is just bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, there's a critical number of cases of dissociative amnesia, which is, you know, which is like how the brain helps us. Like, I think maybe it helped you to sort of just not have a memory of your father, so you don't have to feel the grief of it. And what's unusual about William is that he, what's unusual about William is that there are very few cases. You know, we know of four that might have some similarities, but none are exactly the same. And so there's not a critical number of cases for it to have been studied, classified, and you know, it doesn't make sense to psychologists, it doesn't make sense to neurologists, it doesn't make sense to psychiatrists. And so everyone is just very confused about this, but it seems that you know, potentially the best theory of what happened, since he can't remember if he just learned to ride a bicycle and he had a birthday party, he'd forget both of those things.
Yeah.
It makes one think what seems to make logical sense is that it is a biological problem, that new synapses are not ultimately being formed. A memory trace essentially goes through several electrical firings in the brain through specific brain structures, and then eventually gets organized out into the rest of the brain by synapses being rearranged. And synapses being rearranged requires ability to synthesize proteins and rebuild synapses, rebuild what neurochemicals go between the synapses. And it's, you know, it's a protein event that actually, if that's not happening, then there are going to be no permanent memories in procedures and how-to and memories of events or people.
Does William have like a GoFundMe page or something that someone could donate to? Because this is just really a terrible way to start the new year. It's a sad story.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that thought that you have for him. I think we hadn't thought about that sort of thing. Certainly his wife has had to pick up a second job.
Dr. Burgess, if we may interrupt you for just one second, hang on the line. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back and, you know, maybe that's something we could do. It's so terrible.
That would be nice. Yeah. Unprecedented and unbelievable.
312-981-7200. Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. And we are talking about a very bizarre story that Bill found on the internet, over the weekend. Clinical neuropsychologist Dr. Jerry Burgess on the line with us. We were talking about William, who basically wakes up to the same memory every morning, and it's a terrible story, Dr. Burgess. If there's any way his wife or you get together a GoFundMe page, I'd like to throw something in.
Absolutely.
This has got to be terribly expensive for her.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate that thought, and I'm sure they would as well. I think that their experience through all of this has made them rather shy, and I'd like to reach out to your listeners if that's all right.
Sure.
In terms of just thinking about since the story broke over the summer, I've gotten a few emails of people who have experienced something similar, and people who have theories about perhaps what had happened. And I think that one of the most helpful things is that if people have experienced this, if there was a way that they could let you know or let me know, it's really helpful to hear stories. And we're continuing the research to try and understand what this is all about.
And is there an email address to send your way, Dr. Burgess?
Yes. Should I say it now?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So it's gb222@le.ac.uk.
Okay, let's do it again. gb222@le.mc.uk.
.ac.
.ac, I'm sorry.
AC, yes.
Okay.
.uk.
We'll put a link on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. I know you, being a doctor and being on this case for many years, it's stumped you. And I know you're just looking for other people that have experienced something to obviously try and help William.
Yes, yes, that's right, yeah. And poor William and his family had the experience of no one having heard of this before, and in some cases being laughed out of an office or rejected or thought that they were faking it or something of that nature.
It's terrible.
Oh. So they've had a real hard time, and I've heard other stories of people who also, just because this is so rare, that people don't know what to make of it and can't help. So we're trying to do something about that.
Well, let's keep in touch, and you please let us know if someone does start a GoFundMe page or something, and shy or not, maybe his wife should look into doing that, and I'm sure there are people that would want to help.
Okay, I'll pass on that idea. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dr. Burgess. We appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you so much.
What a story. Unbelievable.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's as tragic as can be. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then a lot more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And Ryan Burrow has joined us to tell us all a story that is another unbelievable. Today's show, Ryan, is filled with stories that are hard to believe, and you have yet another one for us.
Gather around, children. Let me tell you this story about someone putting someone on blast, as the kids would say nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't even know what that means.
You don't know on blast? Well, look it up. Urban
I just
Dictionary.
Learned what good game is.
Yeah. So basically, you know, we've seen this a lot as social media has kind of grown and become a part of our lives. You have a poor experience at a restaurant, at a store, you're going to run to Facebook and Twitter and tell people what an awful experience you had, right?
Isn't that what Yelp is? And that's what happened before Facebook.
It's empowering, right? Yeah. It gives you, as the consumer, an opportunity to speak your mind if you had
revenge, isn't it?
Right?
I don't believe them.
I always had problems with Yelp because either you had a really good time and you point, oh, it was amazing, or you had a really awful time. There's no one who just said,
it was okay.
Fine. It was good.
Yeah, it was all right. Average.
Why would you go online to put,
Right.
You know,
But people do sometimes.
They do. There are mehs out there.
Yeah.
People, M-E-H.
Yeah. And that just means not so great, not so terrible, right in the middle.
Yeah, right. So this case out of Indianapolis, Kilroy's Bar and Grill, over the New Year, this woman went in there. Her name is Holly Jones, at least according to her Facebook page. Did not have a good time. Said she dropped about $700 for her big New Year's Eve celebration.
God,
with
how
her
many
family.
People were there?
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what this $700 went to, but
places will, to her credit, sometimes jack up the price a bit on New Year's Eve. It's a big money night.
Sure.
They'll charge you more.
Maybe she brought some family. Maybe she got some nice champagne. We don't exactly know what happened. But things did not go well. Someone actually had to be wheeled out of the building that evening on a stretcher And here is what the woman went to Facebook and she said. She said, I will never go back to this location. By the way, on the Facebook page of Kilroy's in Indianapolis. I will never go back to this location on New Year's Eve after the way we were treated when we spent $700+ and having our meal ruined by watching a dead person being wheeled out from an overdose. My night has been ruined. Every year we've come to Kilroy's to enjoy New Year's Eve, and tonight we were screamed at and had the manager walk away from us while we were trying to figure out our bill being messed up. The manager also told us someone dying was more important than us than making us feel like our business didn't matter. But I guess allowing a junkie in the building to overdose on your property is more important than paying customers who are spending a lot of money. And then she goes on to talk about the experience she had with the waitress.
What a B-word.
Who is that? The woman who posted this?
Yes, and why don't you explain this alleged junkie?
Yeah, so... wasn't a junkie. It turns out the managing partner of the restaurant, his name is Chris Burton, actually responded on Facebook and said, thanks for reaching out. We love the feedback, whether it be positive or negative. I especially like the feedback like this so others can see the disgusting people that we have to deal with sometimes. First of all, the overdosing junkie that you speak of was a 70-plus-year-old woman who had a heart attack. Thankfully, she was finally revived at the hospital and survived. It sounds like you were very concerned about her, so I thought you should know. This poor lady who was celebrating New Year's Eve with her husband and son had to be placed on the floor of a completely packed bar and have her shirt removed in front of everyone so the paramedics could work on her. But I can completely understand why you think being intoxicated, bleep, that didn't understand your bill should take priority over human life. So... fired it right back at her.
Good
right?
for the manager of Kilroy's.
I love that he would use the phrase disgusting people or disgusting patrons that we have to deal with. I think that just shows how fed up he was. Nobody wants to have a client die on them at any time.
And she didn't die, thankfully.
No, she did not. She is still in the hospital, critical condition right now. And actually, a GoFundMe page has been set up. The family's trying to raise some kind of medical, some money for medical expenses.
I'd like to set up a Go Slap Me page for the woman who put this on Facebook.
The one thing I can say, Chris Burton, the managing, the guy who responded, did not deny that maybe his staff was rude and did not respond politely.
But under those
to
circumstances, with so much going on in a confined space.
Sure.
And that does take precedence over someone questioning their bill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I the only thing I can say is we don't know what this woman knew about what was going on. You know, I mean, we don't know in proximity where her table was versus the person who had collapsed.
But
you
doesn't
know?
She
perhaps
feel...
rumors were spreading.
But wouldn't you feel stupid if... And first of all, I wouldn't take it to Facebook. I would maybe go to the manager the next day and say, you know, I got to tell you, I spent $700 here and I had a problem, blah, 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 blah. But to find out that it was a woman who was having a heart attack who was there with her husband and son, wouldn't you feel like crap?
I think so.
I mean, complaining about that?
I guess this makes the woman look bad. She apparently pulled it down. She's removed her Facebook status or her Facebook account as of now. The manager there at Kilroy says they've gotten a lot of kudos, especially from other restaurant establishments for the way they responded.
Sure.
Don't know if it's going to result in any extra money, but it's they certainly got a lot of publicity out of it. That's for sure.
Are you okay on time? Can you stick around for just a little bit?
Sure, why not? I got nothing.
More with our friend Ryan Burrow, who has nothing. He will be our guest for the next 15 minutes. If you have nothing, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan Burrow is telling us the crazy story that just took place on New Year's Eve in Indianapolis. A woman had some very, very serious health issues in a restaurant and was taken out of the restaurant. And then another woman complained that her experience there at the restaurant was substandard. She was not happy with the way she was treated as another woman fighting for her life was removed from the restaurant. And none of us can believe that this would go on, but it does go on. It goes on every day.
Sure. And the key to that is she didn't go up to the management then or the waitress then or the wait staff then. She went to Facebook and made it very public on Kilroy's Facebook page.
Here's a story I would like to relate to. My wife, before we got married, waitressed for a couple of years, and she told me the story about how one night she was working, and one of her customers had a heart attack there at the table, and it was a large party. There were like 14 people at the table, and because this guy had a heart attack, of course, they all left after having the meal. Nobody paid the bill and stuff. I can understand that. She wasn't tipped. Everybody gets that. It was a serious thing. He could have died. The problem was, at other tables around them, they were so turned off, they said, by this experience that they all left without paying their bills or leaving a tip of any kind to either my wife or any of the other servers in the area. They said there was a mass exodus from people who just went, well,
shame,
I'm not going to sit here and watch this.
Do you think that poor guy planned to have a heart attack?
Of course not.
And
of course
quite honestly, the heart attack table.
That's what they were called, the heart attack.
Yeah, from there on.
Heart attack party of 14? Heart attack party of 14?
The heart attack people didn't pay their bill.
Nobody, like
See,
half the restaurant filtered out.
Are just we going, sure that this person had a heart attack, or was this the...
No, it was legit.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, sure, it was Chris Farley hitting himself.
It was legit.
But they, first of all, you pay your bill. I mean, you pay
absolutely.
The bill.
You can't use while that as
someone's,
an excuse.
No.
Right.
You have one of the 14 people pay the bill while the others are figuring out who's going to drive who to the hospital, who's going to follow the ambulance.
Or at least leave a kid behind to do dishes.
Or
something.
Shame leave the 14 on
I kind them. Of understand that table, you know, because they don't know that the guy's going to live. So everybody filters out.
So you still have to pay.
I would have still paid.
Oh my
but
God.
I could,
what is wrong with
I would
with
have
people?
Still paid. But neighboring tables who didn't even
That's
know the guy.
That's unacceptable.
Terrible.
I went to Ruth's Chris on Dearborn and whatever that is over there, pointing. And Jimmy Mac and I went for our anniversary many Octobers ago. We were having a great dinner. All of a sudden, an ambulance pulls up in front of Ruth's Chris.
Yeah.
And a woman is basically carried out on her chair. They just pulled the chair out to get her outside. And it ruined my meal for one reason. The whole night I was worried about the woman,
sure.
and I hoped she was okay.
Right.
And I managed to eat my steak with the sizzling pan and the butter on it.
You remembered to pay?
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, but it did. Like, it upset me because I was hoping she'd be okay.
Yeah.
Every time I see an ambulance, and I guess this is the one nice thing I've taught my kids, every time I see an ambulance, I make the sign of the cross and say, oh, I hope they're okay.
Nuns, you're like a nun. Nuns, the nuns I had at St. Damien used to do that
really?
All the time. Every time an ambulance would... They would cross themselves. Yeah.
I saw my boys do it once, and it was like, God, I did teach them one nice thing in their
whole
lives.
So you do that. How about that?
But I was worried about other people, but I don't care, heart attack or not, you pay
You're
the bill.
You're still responsible for the bill.
Or at least you come back the next day and say, oh, my God, and all the hubbub,
right.
what do I owe you?
Right. That would be the right way to
God,
play it.
What is wrong with
everybody? I mean, the doctors, you still have to pay the doctors, right?
You
Although
still,
I don't
yes.
think
Doc,
you should.
I had a heart attack.
If you die, I don't think you should pay your bill at the hospital. That's just my
opinion. Really? Because they didn't do their job?
Yeah, they didn't save you.
Well, that's a tough call because they tried to save you.
How
they
do
wanted
you know?
To save you. Well, what's in it for them to not save you? They want to save you.
If they are going to get paid if they save you only, they'll work harder, won't they?
I don't think so.
Well, if you're in your defense, if you die, who's going to come after you, right?
Right. That's true,
go after
too.
Your family, I guess.
And I'm right. kidding about that. All right.
Are you? Yeah? All right.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, what a crazy story.
Yeah, glad we could do a 2-minute or 10-minute ad for Kilroy's Bar and Grill in Indianapolis.
Yeah, go visit Kilroy's,
Absolutely.
But then please pay your tab when you're done, regardless of what you see at other tables.
You know
please.
What bothers me, too, is she said this Facebooker said she had been at Kilroy's a bunch of times.
Right.
So don't you say, boy, this is not typical of their behavior.
Right.
It must have been a bad night before you jump on Facebook.
You would think.
Don't you call them and say, listen, I come here a lot. I don't know what happened last night, but your wait staff was really rude to me. I had a question about my bill. Then they say to her, oh, well, we're sorry, but there was a woman who had a heart attack. We were kind of busy.
Right.
And then you say, oh, okay, that explains it. I still have a question about my bill.
Sure. Can I tell? Here's what I know from friends of mine who are in the restaurant business. Their bread and butter. I don't say that because we're talking about restaurants, Ryan. I'm just saying that for the point of argument.
Got it.
The way they stay in business is repeat customers.
Yep.
That's how they do it. So they want nothing more than to know that you're going to come back once a month, once every 2 months. That's what they need. So they're going to bend over backwards to make your experience pleasant. They'll work with you if something has happened. They want you to come back. This lady just seemed too impatient to even try to deal with them. That's my story.
It's great.
That's all
you know what?
Say.
Happy New Year. People suck. That's what I decided. You wish people good luck. I say people
you're going
suck.
The opposite. Ryan, thanks for being here.
Sure.
Good luck to you and your family in 2016. We'll be back after this. Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I have a feeling it's going to get pretty interesting around here.
It's going to get crazy, and here's why. Rick Perlstein is joining us right now, author and historian. His first piece for The New Yorker was just published, and it has to do with Rahm Emanuel. And boy, do you do a good job of chronicling what his last several years have been like. Rick, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure,
really
brother.
Appreciate
thanks.
That. What sort of response, before we get into the meat of what exactly the article was, what sort of response are you getting since it's been published?
This story was one of the five most read stories on NewYorker.com for four straight days.
Good golly,
Miss
Molly.
And my phone has been ringing off the hook. Part of the reason, I think, is because folks nationally don't hear this stuff because kind of the national media has been in love with the guy for so long.
Yeah.
And then folks like us in Chicago, we know these stories individually. We read the Trib, we read the Sun-Times, and they're reporting this stuff, and they do a good job. WBEZ, too. I don't want to leave them out. WGN. But what reporters don't do is put all this stuff together. And the reason they don't put all this stuff together is that the mayor's press shop is basically run like a kind of mini fascist empire. You know, when I was sitting in this chair 3 years ago, when I did an article about Rahm Emanuel in Rolling Stone, one of your colleagues told me that they finally got an interview with Rahm Emanuel,
mm-hmm.
and that Rahm Emanuel, one of his press secretaries, was kneeling down and whispering in his ear the whole time what questions he was allowed to ask, what questions
what?
He wasn't allowed to ask. He said in 30 years of journalism, he'd never experienced this. And every time I do one of these articles in one of these national magazines about Rahm Emanuel, you know, I'm mostly a historian. I'm not a City Hall reporter. I've never been in the press room. These guys thank me. They say, I can't write this stuff.
Right.
But you can.
Right.
Well, the rise and fall of Rahm Emanuel, it's called the sudden but well-deserved fall of Rahm Emanuel. We did see a rise before mm-hmm. the fall. Mm-hmm. You can find this at NewYorker.com. Rick Perlstein.
Oh, he gets a rise out of people. That's right.
He was. There was a time, and you're very honest and fair about this, I thought, in your article, Rick, where you say he was one of the shining stars of the Democratic Party. He was one of the golden boys for
That's
quite
right.
a while.
Yeah, ever since 1991, when he was one of the first out-of-towners to go to Arkansas to work for this kid, Bill Clinton, who, of course, didn't have a chance. And, you know, he comes to Arkansas, apparently put his feet up on the table in Bill and Hillary's house, and she didn't like that much.
Yeah.
But he basically convinced Bill Clinton that fundraising was the alpha and the omega of winning a presidential race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cut back on your campaigning schedule, talk to the rich guys. And that saved Bill Clinton's butt because if you'll recall, in 1992, he had a sex scandal. Mm-hmm. He had an affair with a woman named Jennifer Flowers, and he was able to saturate the airwaves in New Hampshire with commercials, with all that money he had raised, basically getting down on his knees in contrition. And that's when he got that nickname, the Comeback Kid. And he was so grateful to Rahm Emanuel that suddenly he rose to the stratosphere in the White House.
You tell the story in the article about how he would be talking to potential donors, people that were going to donate
that's
money,
right.
and he'd say, $5,000, that's an embarrassment. You're a $25,000 person. You're going to give us $25,000.
Right.
He was so arrogant about his ways back then, but that's no surprise.
No.
Didn't we like that?
Rahm Emanuel?
When he first became mayor, I kind of liked the arrogance.
Right.
I kind of want somebody who's going to
worn well. Right.
Yeah, he's going to stick up for our city and for the
right.
problems.
Right. You know, kind of the problem is, you know, on whose behalf is he, you know, screaming? You know,
yeah.
is it the regular guy or is it, you know, his banker buddies? And one of the things I relied on was a wonderful article by Ben Jarafsky and Mick Dumke in The Reader a few years ago when they had to do a Freedom of Information Act just to get his actual schedule mm-hmm. to see who they met with. Because when the reporters get his schedule every day, it's blank. Or they'll have, you know, he's doing a ribbon cutting at a park. But they actually saw that, you know, he's really meeting with guys like Ken Griffith, the hedge fund guy. He's meeting with Rauner, you know, who was back then an investment banker who, you know, was the head of the education committee of the commercial club, wasn't governor yet. He was meeting with, you know, all these kind of bankers. And bankers are important.
Yeah.
You know, they help bring jobs to the city. But, you know, he wasn't meeting with the folks in the neighborhoods. He wasn't meeting with the community groups. He wasn't meeting with the aldermen.
Right.
You know, but it took a Freedom of Information Act for the people of Chicago just to learn what their mayor did every day.
If you're just joining us, Rick Perlstein is our guest, author and historian. Wrote a book called The Invisible Bridge, The Fall of Nixon and Rise of Reagan. But we're talking to him right now about an article that was just published in The New Yorker. You can read it at NewYorker.com about our own mayor, Rahm Emanuel. Here's a criticism that I keep hearing, and I'd love your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
People say the difference between him and Mayor Daley,
right.
You pick which Mayor Daley you want, the first version or the second version is, those guys, the Mayor Daleys, they knew who to talk to, who right. to pay off, who to deal with,
right.
and maybe Mayor Rahm Emanuel doesn't have that.
Well, you know, they knew the city, right? I mean, when Mayor Daley got in trouble with the hire truck scandal, you know, he was not exactly clean as the, you know, driven snow. He had kind of friends in all 50 wards to fall back on. Rahm Emanuel, you know, he's from Wilmette. Mm-hmm. You know, he's from Washington. You know, he's from Wall Street, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And he just does not
have roots.
Yeah, the city just doesn't, you know, kind of run through his veins. And now that he's in trouble, it's really, really remarkable how kind of precipitous his fall has been, you know, because he just doesn't have any friends outside of kind of these money guys.
Yeah.
And that's not just going to do in a city like Chicago.
And are those guys truly his friends, though, or is that that's a business?
Well, Rauner's was supposed to be his friend just yesterday.
Rauner was.
He says, oh, my God, Rauner just got a steel-toed boot and, you know, put it on his head. Yeah. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I'm all for the recall,
I'm all for the recall. You know, it's
Bruce
like
Rauner.
A lot of us were like, well, yeah, you know, Rauner, I don't like him. Emanuel, I don't like him. But at least we have a, you know, friend in Springfield in the governor's office because, you know, these guys supposedly drink wine together. They go on vacation together. Nothing. You know, he's completely Rauner has completely shut Emanuel off. He's not letting him get his you know, dispensation he needs to raise property taxes, but keep properties below $250,000 out of the property tax raise. He's not helping with education. He's not helping with gun control. Nothing. He's not even, you know, he hangs out with all the bankers, but he can't even, you know, get their phone calls returned.
Since you brought up education, mm-hmm. problems with not one but two people who are leading the education.
Oh, here, my God.
Or supposed to be leading the education here in Chicago. He had two scandals, right?
Right.
The list goes on and on and on. But the question I wanted to ask is, would other cities tolerate this? Would other states tolerate this? Chicago and the state of Illinois
right.
has a long, long history of some sort of problem in office.
Yeah.
Would, if this was happening in El Paso, Texas, if this was happening in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you pick the city.
We get
would
weary,
they allow
right?
this?
Don't
yeah.
we? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, it's Chicago, sigh.
Yeah.
You know, at the University of Illinois at Chicago in the political science department, they have a they have pictures of governors on the wall.
Yeah.
But it's all the governors who are in jail. Right?
They're going to have to build a new wall.
You know, and that's kind of what one of the things I said when we had the election last year with Chuy Garcia. You know, I was supporting Chuy. My cards are on the table. And I told people who said, well, you know, Rahm Emanuel, you know, he's a SOB, but he's our SOB. And I said, well, he might embarrass the city. You know, he might end up in jail.
Yeah.
And no one really wanted to hear that then.
But he's not going to end up in jail.
Well, what if it turns out that, you know, they have evidence that he saw the video?
I still think he saw the video.
Well, let's take a break and discuss that, because that was a pretty interesting debate back and forth. I don't know how a guy with all that money on the line, like $5 million on the line.
And he's in charge of the city. Yeah. You don't say, even if you, it just shocked me that he said, I didn't see it.
It is a shock.
Because, you know, if we're talking about a big story on the air and you say, did you read the story? No, I didn't.
Right.
I'm going to lie and say I did, like I do every day. Yeah, I read the story. By Rick Perlstein? Yeah, I did it.
Rick Perlstein is our guest. Read him at thenewyorker.com. What a great article he just put together about Mayor Rahm Emanuel. If you want to call in 312-981-7200, back after this is WGN. The article we're talking about is called The Sudden But Well-Deserved Fall of Rahm Emanuel. The author of that article, which, by the way, you can still read at thenewyorker.com, is Rick Perlstein. He's sitting right over there. We were talking just moments ago about the video. This is the mm-hmm. The McDonald video. The mayor maintains right up until... When did it hit? A month and
he
a half ago?
He said he saw it on the news.
He saw it on the news, but he had not seen it prior to that. But we were just all making the point that with that kind of money on the line, they paid the family $5 million.
Without a lawsuit.
To avoid a lawsuit, a $5 million payout. How do you not see that video? Is that even remotely possible?
Right. It's not like Chicago doesn't have fiscal problems. I mean, our schools are $480 million in the hole. $5 million, you know, buys a lot of teachers, buys a lot of libraries.
Sure.
You know, it's nothing to sneeze at. And he's telling us that they're running out $5 million checks without even, like, checking the evidence. That's kind of stinky either way.
But was that, like, Gary McCarthy's job? Did he say, you know, listen...
Gary McCarthy doesn't control the city's finances. You know,
but does he say,
council.
Listen, I saw this video, and really, we're at fault here.
Well, he doesn't trust... He does, you know, Gary McCarthy doesn't have the confidence of the mayor. You know, he was fired
I know.
At that point. But somebody had to sign off on the amount of check and say, yes, go ahead, pay the McDonald family $5 million. Do
the
we
Bucks,
know?
Well, you know, like Harry Truman had that, you know, sign
the buck
on his
stops
desk.
Here.
The buck stops here.
Yeah.
You know, he's an executive, right? We hire him to be the responsible authority, you know, when it comes to the big decisions. He loves saying, you know, the reason I'm unpopular is I make tough decisions, right? Sounds like when he skirted here.
Yeah.
Yeah, because wouldn't you say if somebody presents to him, got to give these people $5 million, I got to see this. I got to see what this is all about.
This is the guy who, you know, is, you know, jumping on the desk, you know, when a donor, you know, isn't, you know, like writing him a big enough check, you know.
You also make it a point in the article to say that should some of these things come to light prior to the election, he may not have been elected as mayor.
There's no way. You can't win a citywide election in Chicago without the black vote, whether it was Daley or Rahm Emanuel. And the first time, the first election, you know, in 2011, no problem. He's got the Obama connection. 2015, there's a big division in this town between the African-American political establishment and the Hispanic political establishment.
I didn't know that he was going to win the second time.
Well,
I really
mean,
didn't.
He didn't get a majority of the vote, right? He lost in a landslide in the first round, as it were.
Yeah.
It was, you know, not a great campaign run by Chuy Garcia. But, you know, political campaigns and elections are creatures of events.
Mm-hmm.
And if the people of Chicago had known what they know now, you know, no way. You know, he's back on Wall Street.
Rick, we had Kristen McQuarrie here yesterday who writes for the Chicago Tribune and often writes about politics. And I was saying how
Politico.
There was, right. I was saying how there was a time where everybody expected Rahm Emanuel's last stop politically to not be the mayor of Chicago, but he would be seeking some sort of higher office.
Yeah, he wanted to be the first Jewish speaker of the House. Was that, his famous thing. Yeah.
People have mentioned that many times. Do you think after what we've seen, the job that he's done as mayor thus far, that he has any kind of a chance for running for higher office, or are those days done?
Do you guys remember the Peter Principle?
Yeah, the book and movie?
No.
Yeah, you remember what it's called? The Peter Principle is the principle that people rise to their level of incompetence.
Yeah.
If you do a good job, you know, as a regional manager, you know, they promote you to vice president. You do a job as a good job as vice president, you become president. Well, maybe you were meant to be a regional manager. Maybe Rahm Emanuel should have stuck around as a fundraiser. Maybe that's what, you know, he needs to be doing. I think what's going to happen with him in Chicago, that's still up in the air. But I don't think there's a place for him in the rest of national politics now.
Somebody just texted us, you know, Mayor Daley had a lot of friends, so Daley's corruption was okay, because we said it's Daley was from here, both the Daleys, and kind of knew.
I'm just saying he knew how to wiggle out of the jam.
Right, but someone was just texting, it's kind of bad that too many people feel this way. And
yeah,
in a way,
it's terrible. I get it all the
true.
Time. This is Chicago. This is Chicago. This is Chicago. We have to stand for better. You know, this is all we're going to get. You know, people get the government they deserve.
Well,
right?
Also,
we deserve better. Come on.
Well, not if we don't fight for it. Not if we just, you know, kind of hold up our hands and say this is, you know, we did have an election, right? The turnout was terrible.
It was, wasn't
you know,
it?
People didn't turn out because, you know, they got these mailers in the mail that said, oh, if you elect Chuy Garcia, he's going to raise your property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he raised property taxes when he was in the city council 30 years ago.
Are things harder to hide now than they were when Mayor Daley was in office? Is it a more difficult move to hide something that you don't want the public to know about?
Well, I mean, Rahm Emanuel had no problem hiding this video until a judge told him he had to release it. So, you know, it's not too hard to hide things. I mean, yes, we have the internet, right? Yes, we have Twitter. Yes, we have Facebook. But it was, you know, 2003 when George Bush, you know, was able to hide the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, right? If powerful people want to hide things from the public, there are ways to do it. And
how do we find out that they're lying to us?
Well, it's a continual struggle, right? You know, we sit in rooms like this and we discuss it, right?
Yeah.
And you hold their feet to the fire. Because look at what's happened to Rahm Emanuel. They rely on the Democratic mandate, not just to be elected, not just to stay in office, but to be able to do things, you know, to be able to govern.
We were talking a little while ago about when he first emerged or through his emergence, there was an arrogance to him, a cockiness. Is that gone? Has it subsided a little bit, a lot? What do you think?
if the cockiness was gone, he would have resigned. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's cocky just, you know, kind of staying in office.
He did nothing wrong.
It's who he is. You know, I saw a video of him from 1978. Did you guys see this?
No.
He was at there was a Nazi rally in Marquette Park, the American Nazi Party, and a guy did a documentary about it. And there is this cocky, I think it's like 18-year-old kid with a big Jufro and his shirt off, and he's just kind of looking like exactly like now, and it's Rahm. He's the same guy, man.
And what was his involvement there?
He was sticking it to the Nazis.
Oh,
man.
He was okay. He picked the right side of the argument.
Well, did he have a beard in his hand? Really, because I think I saw this.
I don't think
remember.
He had a beard, but then there's the one, you know, where he has the big, you know, fro and he's wearing his leotard back in his ballet days, you know.
He is a former ballet dancer, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe future. That could be the future,
He's
too.
He's got the moves like Jagger.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
I don't think Jagger. We're ready for that, Jelly. I don't know.
People have hinted at a recall, that they're trying to find some loophole to be a recall. Is that even a remote possibility? Are we going to see him recalled as mayor?
You know, one place in which power is even less responsive to public pressure than Chicago is Springfield.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as he has the confidence of Michael Madigan, nothing's going to happen. And, you know, Michael Madigan is not kind of weighing his decisions based on, you know, who's marching down the street in Chicago, you know, or even polls. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's back scratching. It's that sort of thing.
And so, this article that we're talking about is in The New Yorker.
Yeah, NewYorker.com.
I'm curious, what's the perception of other big city mayors and other big cities about him right now? Are they looking at him going, boy, this guy's had a bad stretch of luck? Or are they just saying, could he screw up another thing? Is that even possible?
I think that, you know, if you're in elected office, it's a very funny job. If you like your job, right? Oh, my God, there's a friend of mine. If you like your job, and you're an elected official, it's kind of scary. You could lose your job in an election, and then suddenly you have to pack up your things and go.
Right.
They're very afraid of losing a job they like. So they look at someone like Rahm Emanuel, and they say, holy cow, I could be next.
Yeah.
So they tend to, you know, I think, I don't know who it was who said this. I think it was one of the Clinton guys. I think it might have been Carville. When your opponent is drowning, you hand him an anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, our man is juggling anchors.
Yeah.
We should hook him up with the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow.
They're good jugglers.
I feel like we should give Charles, you have 20 seconds to say something. Go.
Okay, I just say that the city has given out $520 million, and it's my understanding that each time the city council and the mayor had a meeting to decide to give out money, so they didn't say what's going on for all those years that they're handing out all this money, $520 million.
This is
it's
settlements
not only
for all
the mayor,
sorts of
but
police
it's on
stuff.
The city council.
Right. Right. This city has been cost a lot of money. There have been 400 police shootings that were investigated by IPRA, the independent, not really independent, police review board. And of those 400, do you know how many have been ruled unjustified?
Just one so far, right?
One. Yeah. Right?
Really?
So that costs the city a lot of money because IPRA can sign off on those things, but federal judges don't.
We're going through it right now with the Burge situation. With all, they're
Burge
making amends
has cost
to the
city
people.
An enormous amount sure. of money. If there wasn't a thin blue line of silence, we would be able to afford schools. You know, we would be able to, we would, our bond rating would not be junk.
It's awful.
Well, Charles
thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. Rick, great meeting you. You did a very, very nice job on this article. Again, it's called
You're
The
Spunky.
Sudden. You're very spunky. And just for the record, you said earlier, hey, I see a friend of mine. We all saw that friend. You're not just seeing things.
Janet Underhill.
We all saw Janet Underhill. The Sudden but Well-Deserved Fall of Rahm Emanuel. Read it at the NewYorker.com.
Although he's still standing today.
Yep. One more thing. I got an article coming out in Washington Monthly, Washington Spectator, about police stuff. And I'll get in touch with you guys.
Is
when that
coming soon?
Up. Yeah.
All right. Very good. Nice to meet you, Rick. Thanks so
Cheers.
Much. It's Rick Perlstein. Hold on. We've got more coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.